listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Hey yo, there's two ways into the hood, one plain, the other smoking chronic like straight to the brain. Hey yo, let's get loose. Hennessy straight with tomato juice, Queen Stallion, my gun's fully Italian. Now y'all niggas recognize Italians. I play the best hood, OT with Tim Westwood. Used to be on Section 8, now my section is good. Thugged out, niggas, we eat as much as we could. And I don't give a fuck what you don't say this shit. I don't give a fuck what you can say your shit. Y'all niggas like extra skin on my dick. Listen to Bob Marley. You funny niggas like Steve Harvey. Front and lie with a weak army. Play the nice guy too. I even smoke with you. But on the realness, I ain't got no love for you. That's why I never do a song for you. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
Now even if your baby mother fucked the crew and promised to give us head and swallow it too, I still say no. No means no. No can go. Your niggas suck with hate rate. They get my flow. Anyway, man, we are live on a Sunday morning, as you can tell from the Gospel of Noriega. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave us 5-star reviews, of course. Go to the blackguywhotips.com. Become a premium listener. Leave us donations if you want to do that there. If you want to leave comments, vote in the polls, you can all do all that stuff there. You can email us, theblackguywhotips@gmail.com. You can leave us voice messages. Long as they're 2 minutes or less, 704-557-0186. We respond to all that stuff on Saturdays on what we like to call the feedback show. So you guys can do all that stuff, all right? The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
and the unofficial sport
is bullet ball.
A bullet ball extreme. And this podcast is brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions. Karen and Rod, we have two albums out. They are on everywhere you can get music. One of them is called The Best of Rod and Karen, and the other one is called Sunspot and Other Ratchetness. You can find them, stream them, whatever you want to do. Leave comments if you get it on iTunes or Amazon. If you listen to it on Spotify or Tidal or something like that, where they're at, just let us know. And at Shadow Dog Prod is the Twitter handle for Dexter, who has been a very good sponsor and loyal supporter of the show. So since way back, so make sure you guys continue to support and check that out. We appreciate everybody. It takes the time to do that, guys. All right.
Yeah, I was talking to Dexter when we met him last weekend when we met, when we seen him. And yeah, he said he been sponsoring us around 300 something.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, you go way back. He was like, yeah, y'all was doing like, I think he said 3 shows a week back then.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been going for a while, man. So I appreciate him. And by the way, the name of that artist is Mr. Jukes.
Yes, Mr. Jukes is Flames.
And the album is called God First, and it's a whole 10 tracks.
Okay, could you play a clip of the song people to like? Because you know you played
Grant Green with Charles Barkley. I mean Charles Bradley.
I'm about to say no.
All right, I'll play some.
What was it, Apple, one of them commercials, because I kept hearing it and they would play like a snippet of it and I was like, that song goes, but it don't play long enough for me to try to find out who plays it. So I was trying to figure out, and Roger found it, so I was like, well, there gotta be an album, and I'm pretty sure the album goes just as hard as that, so I'll be starring that somewhere.
Yeah, lately I've been listening to Cupcake with 2 K's. I don't know if you guys have heard.
Is that what you was playing in the kitchen for me?
I think you turned on the speaker thing, and when you turned on the lights, and that started playing.
Oh, okay.
But I was already listening to that on my own. You're welcome to enjoy it, though. I love this song. I listened to this before the show started.
I know what's happening in there.
Every once in a while, I need a thought bop in my life.
You know? Oh, this is a thought bop.
I thought I came, but I peed on the dick. Pubic hair got inches, that's weave on the dick. Pussy like a tree, it got leaves on the shit. Bang bang, this pussy cheap, keep with the dick. Climbing on that dick, need a 10-foot ladder. I love the D, that's my favorite ladder. My news in your phone, taking up your data. My cakes got fatter, bad use it, come as a batter. Look down to your dick and tell him I won't disappoint it. Pussy on punishment if she miss a dick appointment. Sloppy toppy for Poppy Lee, sloppy Joe Shook. I only call you Catholic cause your dick is off the hook. Swat so wet, you could take a cruise on it. Sucking your neck till I leave a bruise on it. Let you eat the pussy, just don't use a spoon on it. Put it in a box like you bout to move on it. This that submarine pussy, Mr. Clean pussy. This that I'm about to fuck you longer than a limousine pussy. High self-esteem pussy is a dream pussy. If you're broke, then a pussy acting funny like a mean pussy. Easy.
Woo. Bars.
She said her pussy like a vending machine. I fell out the kitchen.
She said she used cum as a conditioner. She was like, cum in my pubic hair, I use it as conditioner. I was like, god damn,
that's serious right there.
Kind of Vanessa Del Rio ass. Anyway,
I don't know, but her coochie hair is in good shape. I don't comb it.
No, it's amazing. It's an amazing song. It's amazing what you can find on Tidal, guys. Surfing around, I found a lot of good music lately. I've been listening to Childish Major's album. He's from North Carolina. I didn't know that. But his joint is Flames.
Never heard of him.
I played it in the kitchen the other day when I was cooking.
It's basically like an
EP. I guess it's a whole album, but it's like only 10 songs. It feels like an EP more than a whole album.
Okay.
Oh, 8 songs. It's only 25 minutes long.
Oh yeah, that's more of an EP than an album.
But it's got SZA on there, Isaiah Rashad, Drum, that nigga Six Lack, or Black as people call him. It's dope, man. Let me see if I'll play a song for y'all. He got this song, No I and Team. Oh no, actually, you know, I'll just play. Hold on, I'll just play the first track. Aim High is dope. I mean, they all dope, but.
Yeah, I need a first class window. I never seen nobody fighting for middle. I done seen a nigga that's too tired to get up. Grab a cup of water, eat content with hiccup. Cool combine, maybe Joe vibe. C4 vine, know we bout to blow right, right, right. Man, sleep your whole life away, that shit like suicide. But who am I? Look, I've been working on myself. Discipline. Do or die. How the hell you gon' hit if you shootin' low? Ain't high. This shit ain't poppin' in the Carolinas. I'm a barber with a shotty, shoot it, ain't line up. I ain't never seen a million, I'm on full throttle. Yeah. Deposits, yeah. I like it. The same hand to get handouts you fight with. You gotta say what you mean it when you don't like shit. Ayy, I used to be the nigga not controlling the vibe. They gotta see a leader when they look in my eyes. I gotta make this shit shake. I ain't get up out the field just to pump fake. Grab face cause you know that we divide pies. Four ways, spin a drop up on the price tag. Roll rate, soon enough you get fed up playing all day. You gotta air work, you been praying all day. And never trust a hoe who be laying all day. I need a first class window. I never seen nobody fighting for middle. I done seen a nigga that's too tired to get up. Grab a cup of water, eat content with hiccup. Cool combine, maybe Joe vibe. C4 vine, know we bout to blow right, right, right. Man, sleep your whole life away. That shit like suicide. But who am I? Look, I've been working on myself.
Anyway, I love that shit. That whole album is, it just felt like it'd be over before it even started because it's so good.
Yeah, that's a short period of time. Yeah, 25 minutes flies.
Yeah, so. Anyway, put y'all up on some music a little bit. That was not necessarily what we planned to do, but kind of got on a tangent.
All right, but that first song, I love that song. And I know I'm not the only one that's been listening to the Apple commercial that come on one of them commercials and was like, who the hell is that?
Oh, nah, it's dope.
Because them horns catch you, bro. Them horns go.
Yeah, if you like horns, I'm really into this album by this, I guess you call it a band? called Too Many Zoos.
That explains, every time I hear you play that, I just want somebody to rap over it. And
well, they have rap on some of it.
Okay.
Like, it's not all it's not all singing.
Okay.
But they have that, some of it is rap. But yeah, they got
it goes hard too.
They got some serious horns on their shit. Mm-hmm. And the name of the album is Subway Gods, GAWDZ. This is just like the second song.
And the beat flips, oh my gosh, it's everything. And it make you want to dance. Mm-hmm.
It's good workout music too.
Great workout music. Hey. Come on, ladies. Let's go. Let's warm up. Left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. Zumba class. Don't get tired yet, ladies. Come on. Three more. Two more. One more. Let's do them leg lifts, ladies. Come on. You about to fucking pass out. Guys, we want to beat our goal today. One more mile to go. Come on. Keep them wheels spinning.
Anyway, that shit goes.
It goes hard.
There's a ton of shit on there I could play, but that's just like just one of the ones with a lot
of
brass.
Yes, for you know, you'd be like, well, goddamn. Well, goddamn. Oh, shit. The beat flipped again.
Anyway, I don't even know what we're going to talk about today. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
I said, it don't matter to me. I guess we have fun up front before we get to whatever depressing news you're about to bring our way.
Well, I got other good news, guys. So I don't know if I said it on here, but you know, I do Yelp reviews sometimes, and there's this one place, Amelie's, we went to, this mm-hmm. French like bakery place, mm-hmm. and I left a nice review, and when I came back, they like came over to the table and stuff, and that was kind of cool. Well, apparently I got invited to a tasting for their new like menu items and stuff last week. They wrote an email to me, a Yelp message to me, which was like super cool. And you know, they were like, hey, would you like to come to a tasting, and you know, talk to us about our food. Which is, you know, it's kind of funny to me because, you know, I don't consider myself any level of a critic or
foodie like that. Yeah.
But they really just said they like, and I'm sure that the other people at this shit are probably like, you know.
Yeah, professional food critic. Yeah, like I said, we started getting on Yelp and taking pictures and things like that. And I didn't realize that it's a lot of people that actually look at Yelp and actually get into Yelp. And what I realized particularly about Yelp is that people will interact with you, particularly the small business owner. Like, they'll hit you up and be like, hey, thank you for leaving, you know, that on my page and this and that. And you know, I've been checking in and stuff like that. And it will actually, one thing I like about it, but like, hey, you checked in this place so many times, or like me and Roger check a minute or two behind each other, we'll check in at the same place on Yelp, and they'll be like, hey, you got a buddy that you always checking with, y'all best friends, you know, best Yelp friends.
Yeah.
And so I really have been enjoying using the app, because I've actually, you know, we've actually been branching out and trying new things, you know, through and because of the app. And it's very helpful for people that are like out of town, or you don't know what to get or something like that. You can actually read the reviews and stuff like that. It's a really helpful app.
And I'm still figuring out shit to do on Yelp, because I don't know really how to work it. But yeah, after I left the you know, Amelie's review, I got a a message from Amelie's that said, "Hi Rod, although you haven't left us a review recently, Amelie's is," and by the way, I didn't know you could leave multiple reviews, but
yeah, you can leave you every time you go.
That's weird. Amelie's is doing an event later this month, and I want to see you if you'd be interested in participating in a focus group about our menu options. We are calling it Talking Taste. It should last no longer than an hour and a half. We'll be providing a variety of sandwiches, breads, vegetarian and vegan options for you to evaluate within a group. We will be asking the group questions to learn about past experiences with us and also some questions for a more in-depth understanding of how our menu is currently viewed. I understand that this seems really random, but I recall your review and it seemed like I accidentally moved down.
Yeah, but yeah, every time you go to locations, you can leave a review every time you go. So some people, every time they go to places, they leave a review every time.
Oh yeah, it says I recall your review and it seemed like this would be something you would not just be good at but enjoy also. Personally, I deeply enjoy your reviews in general, so keep up the good work. Did Sean King ever unblock you on Twitter? He did not. Please please feel free to email me, and she gives her email address if you're interested. Thank you, Rod. And I said, I love to attend and Mr. King never unblocked me, shaking my head. Is it possible that my wife can come with me because Karen has her own food podcast, you know, Lip Smacking Good. Mm-hmm. We have like a little mobile mic set up, so I don't know if that's something where maybe we could interview them or talk to people. I don't know if they would want us to do that or not, but the point being, like, one, if I'm going, I feel like, you know, I'm gonna at least try to get Karen in the door. At the time I had no idea how, you know, if this is very exclusive or not, but it turns out there were only 10 people invited to this thing. Mm-hmm. So she was like, well, it's kind of exclusive, so only 10 people got invited, but you know, if someone does an RSVP, maybe she can come, but I'll let you know. And it turns out somebody didn't RSVP, so Karen's gonna be coming up there with me. And
yeah, I'll bring my little mic, you know.
Yeah, we'll and see. Ask,
but you know, like, if we don't get an interview, I'm cool with that too.
And if yeah, we do, if nothing really else, we can at least talk about the experience on the show and stuff.
Right.
At any rate, we going, so it's cool. You know, I wasn't sure. That's definitely the kind of thing I probably would have said no to last, I don't know, 2 years ago, before 2017. But I'm like, why not? You know, why not me? You know,
come on, why not me? And also, the thing is, what I've realized, particularly when we go out to eat, they actually pay attention to the Yelp reviews. Like, they look like, I don't leave bad Yelp reviews, you know, mm-hmm. but that's just me personally. Not unless it's probably something atrocious, but I've never had anything that bad that happened where I'd be like, your service was just terrible. But some people get off on the negativity on Yelp reviews. And because particularly small businesses, they actually read that stuff and reply back and respond. And also, whenever you start pulling out your phones and taking pictures, that catches people's eyes, like, you know, like the service, the hostess, like, they see you doing that stuff. So odds are they figure out either you're a food critic or you're on Yelp. So I know that actually, depending on the situation, might affect the service, whatever. Like, oh, okay, they're about to post something online with us. When the average person goes out to eat all the time and don't even think about that, or they'll do it but not like actually in the restaurant.
Yeah, I never even really, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they get that alert right away, or if they even checking that right away, or how that works, really. But
it depends on the business owner.
But yeah, I've been leaving more. I've been writing more Yelp reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta go back and leave some more too, because the thing is, after you know, you check in and, you know, we leave pics and things like that, so people see your pics and stuff. Yeah, if you don't leave a review right then, it actually will hang in your thing. You can go stroll through and actually pick and leave reviews at any period of time for that particular visit, and then when you go again and check in, it will allow you to leave another review again.
Well, I left some more for different places.
Mm-hmm. They were hilarious, but I said you can read them if you want to.
Okay, all right, it's been a while since I read these. I'll go through a couple.
They are funny. A Moment in Yelp with Rod, y'all, they are hilarious.
I wish I had music for this. I don't know.
Yeah, and I know Yelp does the following, all that stuff. I think if you follow me, I'm Say That Again on Yelp. Who are you on Yelp?
I'm just Rod M. Okay. I don't know how you follow. If you follow us on other social medias, I tweet out my reviews sometimes, so I feel like people should hear them that way.
I think I'm just Say That Again. Shit, I don't know.
Anyway, I gotta find some music for this. I don't know.
Moment in Yelp with Rod.
I don't know. What about? Sure, let's use this. I don't care. So this is when we went to Dim Sum when we first got back from Seattle. Mm-hmm. As I stepped off the plane in Charlotte, I had one thought in my head. dumplings. I recently attended a conference in Seattle, PodCon, and tried soup dumplings for the first time. My life was forever changed, but I was saddened to discover that Din Tai Fung only had 4 locations in the entire United States, and none of those locations were on the East Coast. So it was with this pioneer spirit in mind that my wife and I set out to explore our local cuisine for some sort of substitute. I put dumplings into the Yelp app, and it returned with a few results. Dim Sum Chinese restaurant was one of the first on the list, and we went about 2 p.m. on a weekday, and it was basically empty. They have a menu with pictures of the various appetizer dishes, and you check off, and they bring them to you, and we tried as much as we could fit into our stomachs before getting way too full. We had to bring the rest home. We ordered so much food, it still came to less than $50 for both of us. A few days later, our adventurous spirits returned, and we found ourselves in Dim Sum once again. This time, it was a Sunday afternoon, and the experience was completely different. The place was packed. Everyone was talking in languages we didn't understand with our ignorant American minds. When we sat down this time, they brought around carts full of delicious foods already prepared, and we just picked which items we wanted off the cart, and they put it right on the table. It was like a dim sum buffet that came around to your table. We tried all sorts of things we never tried before, even chicken feet. What do chicken feet taste like? Chicken. The waitstaff was attentive and made sure we knew what we were ordering if we had any questions. This place felt so authentic to the Asian community that I felt like a tourist in my own city.
Right.
Thank you, Dim Sum staff, for welcoming us into your home. I love this place and will definitely return. See, that was a nice one.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Southwest Kitchen and Bar Seoul.
Mm-hmm.
I have never been to the Southwest of the U.S. Maybe one day. But I like to think that when the great rapper Chuck D first said the words, "By the time I get to Arizona," he had no idea places like this existed. If only he'd known, we may have been robbed of one of the greatest songs of all time. "By the time I get to Florida" just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Mm-mm.
Seoul is beautiful inside and out. Whoever decorated this joint did the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
The food was all intriguing combinations that made me want to return and try them again and again. The food feels fancy, but the atmosphere didn't make me feel underdressed in my t-shirt and jogging pants. This place hasn't been open long, and I think we got a waiter that was new. He seemed a little unsure of himself, but he did just fine in the end. It is a little expensive if you're just expecting Mexican food. It's not. It's got that Southwest plane ticket on it, so come prepared to spend a little dough. Seoul is a great away spot for Americans to remember that what brings us together in these troubled times. We may not agree on which lives matter, if men are trash, who can marry who, or who the president of the United States should be. But we can all agree that trans fats are delicious. And isn't that what it's really about? All of us distracting ourselves with delicious treats as we pray Kim Jong doesn't nuke us into oblivion before Black Panther comes out February
18, 2018. Come on.
That was my review of them. Is this song about to run out? Hold on, I gotta make sure. Okay, cool. I got some time. Din Tai Fung, this is the one we went to in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. That place was delicious.
Why are there only 4 of these in the U.S.? Din Tai Fung is so good, I knew it was gonna be delicious when I walked by the door on the way in, and there were people making soup dumplings in a room dressed in all white. It looked like the scene in New Jack City where Pookie was monitoring the workers packing up crack rocks.
Yes, it did.
That was when I knew this place was the bomb. They are literally serving that crack. The wait staff was friendly and attentive even at 10 a.m. and when my wife and I walked through the door, we explained that we'd never been there before, and they gave us such a detailed and thorough explanation of the menu that I could have applied for a job thereafter. Soup dumplings are the Beyonce of dumplings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, F whatever dumplings you had before. If they not soup dumplings, then they are just playing games with your taste buds. We don't have anything like this in Charlotte, North Carolina, so I'm gonna have to learn how to make soup dumplings on my own.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to my house and see a bunch of people in white folding dumplings while I'm doing jumping jacks in the background, just know that I gone full new dumpling city, and I'm not getting high on my own supply.
Mm-mm.
Thanks to Denise, who hooked us up with the gift certificate for the meal. We didn't even spend $50, so I don't know what the fool Angel C is talking about. What that fool Angel C is talking about in the review section, who left 2 stars. Do your taste buds work? But I digress. If you're ever fortunate enough to be in the vicinity of Seattle, I say give this place a try. Yeah, I don't know what Angel C was talking about. Mm-hmm. She was hating.
Oh, that place was delicious.
Mm-hmm. Let me find some more classic music because it's about to run out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see. Raleigh, y'all know this spot. We talked about it on the show.
This is my, and shout out to some of our fans. I think last week or the week before last, they actually came to Charlotte for something and hit us up and said him and his wife tried it and it was delicious.
A few people have hit me up about this.
Mm-hmm. Y'all, they're so good.
One woman even replied to this. Anyway, I'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
We love this place. My wife and I try to get out to Raleigh at least a couple times a month. I'm in love with their crab fried rice, but they have so many delicious offerings on the menu. They also have great happy hour deals like half price sushi and apps if you come at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
But any time is the right time for Raleigh. The staff is friendly and welcoming. The inside is a bit small, but it just lends itself to an intimate atmosphere, intimate enough that you can sometimes hear what the table next to you is talking about,
mm-hmm.
including a woman who was walking her friend through his divorce by snitching to him about what his estranged wife was up to.
What?
That was a pretty good day. I always get the cucumber crush cocktail. You think cucumber, why would I drink that? But honestly, it's tasty and refreshing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what white privilege feels like, but I'd imagine the refreshing taste of a cucumber crush sliding down my throat is the closest I'll ever come to it.
Come on.
Then the menu is one double-sided page. Much of it is appetizers and sushi, and as of yet, I haven't had anything on the menu that wasn't delicious. Be careful with the drunken noodles, they are spicy. You will be coughing a bit, and if you go above anything above two on the spice.
Right, because they'll be like, oh, what is it, 1 through 5? And you know, us Americans, we'd be like, yeah, give me a 3 or 4. They'd be like, you don't want that, you don't want that.
But see, me, I like it spicy. Spice me up, baby. I need to clear up these sinuses anyway. There's convenient parking in the garage behind Raleigh, and there are also spaces on the street right in front of the building. I don't know how I hadn't heard of this place before, but it's worth a trip. And the only downside I can think of is they don't take the tails off the shrimp when they serve them. I tried to request it, but they were like, that's just how it is, cuz. And I respect their honesty. I just don't get the shrimp anymore, but all the food is still worth it. P.S. Learning to love yourself is difficult, but it is rewarding. Don't be too hard on yourself. Learn to accept your flaws and realize no one should be judged by their worst day. I love you.
Oh.
I like to be inspirational sometimes. Lenny Subs. Mm-hmm. Went there the other day, y'all. I don't know if y'all know Lenny's. Everybody know Jersey Mike's. People don't know Lenny's.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, me and Lenny's go way back. Like, so far back, I feel like I could call him Leon.
Ah!
You can't, though. You don't know Leon like that. Unlike his more charming cousin, Mike from Jersey, Leon is not about these games. If you're eating in, they will bring your sandwich out to you. And they have a vast assortment of potato chips. This is an old school shop where you get your money's worth. I always leave with a full stomach and a full wallet. They have 2 TVs and they are never on Fox News, which cannot be appreciated enough. Much like their fresh ingredients, Lenny Subs likes their news real. And if you get a sub, you have to add banana peppers or the hot pepper relish. It is their specialty. It's a little spicy, but in this weather, we can all use a sinus clearing, right? I'm just be trying to help y'all sinuses out, really.
Come
That's
on.
What these reviews is about.
Come on. And the thing, before you go in, the thing about Lenny's, they have like 4 sizes. They largest one like a 15 inch. And like, if you order that, you literally can split it with like 4 people and it is worth every single dime. And they chicken Philly is flames.
I watched a documentary on Netflix about Amanda Knox. She's like the OJ Simpson of Italy. Y'all know who I'm talking about? Anyways, I think she did it. I don't know, man. Life is strange. But she confessed and everything. And her boyfriend confessed. Who confesses to a murder in another country at 20 years old unless they did it? Am I tripping? She also blamed a random black dude from the bar they went to. Like, really, chick? Not feeling that at all. But get your coins, boo. And then the last review I left was for Midwood Smokehouse. It's a barbecue place.
Oh, that place is good. They got a big pig on the logo.
I came in here with some rolling papers and a lighter, but quickly found out it was not that kind of smokehouse. After I got over my brief disappointment, I discovered it was my second favorite kind of smokehouse, the barbecue kind. The setup is really nice and spacious. We went for lunch and we were sat immediately and got our food pretty quickly. We tried these bacon wrapped stuffed jalapeno peppers that were to die for.
Oh, they were so good.
Midwood believes that those who stay ready don't have to get ready. When they keep the barbecue sauces on deck on each table, and they have wet naps on hand. You'd be surprised how many restaurants that serve sticky food items with no wet naps.
Before you go on, yes, you serve wings and shit, but you don't have no wet naps. We don't have no wet naps. What the fuck a paper towel gonna do? I mean, not paper towel, regular ass napkin gonna do? It's like, you serve sticky shit. I mean, honey, garlic, crusted wings. I want a wet nap.
The manager came over and checked on our table a couple times as well. That was pretty dope. Not the kind of dope I expected in a place called Smokehouse, but still dope. At least it wasn't named Midwood Trap House, although I guess they do move a lot of birds. While we're here, LeBron James should win the NBA MVP every single year he's in the league. I mean, what else does this guy have to do? I think he could take a pickup team from the local YMCA to the NBA Finals. We really don't appreciate the greats while they're all playing. He never gets injured. He is an outspoken social critic, and he doesn't cheat on his wife. We can't say that about Jordan, Kobe, or anybody else you consider to be the king of the NBA. The biggest knock on him is that he moved from Cleveland to Miami when he was 20-something years old. Yeah, like, you wouldn't want to do that if you could. It's time for people to let LeBron James hate go and give him his flowers while he can still smell them. So there you guys go. We are all caught up. Okay, classical music, that's enough.
This has been your Moment in Yelp with Rod.
I still have
you probably got plenty more
to write. Mm-hmm. I need to write more. I got so many more. Anyway, we got interviewed. We got interviewed by blacknerdproblems.com. We talked about it at PodCon. It's finally out. It came out on the 12th, so it's only been out for a couple of days. I'll include this link in the show notes if I remember. I hope I remember. But it's titled Pod Only Knows, Interview with the Blackout Tips. It was a really fun, thorough interview.
It was so much fun.
She went and made gifts out of our
yes. And I was like, where did she get this from?
Yeah, like she got live footage from when we did our live show and us dancing to some of the songs. And she went and got, when we were on TV, RevoltCon.
Yes, and she went way back. She even got some stuff when we had a Spreecast spotlight.
Yeah, was it Vocal or Spreecast? It was Spreecast?
I think.
One of them.
One of them.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, it was a Vocal. Yeah, okay. Vocal.
It was really fun. It was like such a great interview. She asked so many good questions. And, you know, if you guys get a chance, maybe go there, leave comments, let them know that, you checked it out. Let them know if you think the interview was good. That's the kind of stuff that really helps us, with publications and stuff, because I think most people feel like writing about a podcast or something is about bringing attention to the podcast, which it should be. But also, it's really important that we bring attention to these media platforms that write about us to let them know that, hey, we have fans, they're interactive, they listen, they, you know, even if you just go there and go, great interview, good job, or whatever, it really does help us out. And, it only takes a few seconds. So if you guys get a chance, please check out the interview. And like I said, I'll try to link it in the show notes as well. But it was really fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. And those things, you know what, for people to go like, I love y'all, I want to support, but I don't have the money. This is one way to get the word out without you actually have to spend a dime. Sometimes helping us is not always financially. So for those of you like, yeah, I love you, I want to help push and support, this is one way. Click on the link, leave comments, let them know how you feel and stuff like that. And those things really do matter.
All right, let's talk about some news. I think I'm all in on President Oprah. Not that I feel like that's gonna happen.
Right.
But the joke is too good, and you guys are fucking it up, being all serious. And I don't have
way too serious.
I don't have 3 years worth of being serious about this bullshit to end me. So, President Oprah actually went and did something that President Trump did not. She went out there and met rescue teams and search dogs hunting for missing people in the California mudslides that have left 19 people dead. And she revealed her own home was left with just minor damage.
Good God.
Yeah. She got home, you know, one of her many homes, I'm sure, out there. And, she was out there hanging out with the rescue people and talking to them. Very presidential. Unlike some people occupying the White House, but I'm not going to say no names. They don't really care about people, so they don't, it never even occurs to them to go out and, you know, meet people at these tragedies until they're getting fucking roasted on Twitter. Then it's like, oh yeah, let me take a second out from beefing with some nigga that wrote a book, and let me take a second out from complaining about people taking a knee during NFL games and playing golf and actually do a presidential thing, like show up at a catastrophe and offer people some sort of solace and let them know that they're still in their country's minds and shit. But whatever,
right?
But yeah, she went on out there and made sure to thank the rescuers and made sure it wasn't about her. She's like, it's not about my house, you know, I'm rich, my house is straight, It's like, you know, disasters just know to go around rich people shit. I don't know what, I don't know if it's just built better or what, but the poor, the rest of us, she was worried about, you know. And the emergency responders explained to Oprah how they train the animals and that they hope will find the remaining five missing individuals, possibly dead, but hopefully alive. Aww. You know, the other thing I wonder is if, I feel like if she starts doing shit like this, she might really be about running for president. I don't know. You know, not that she doesn't do shit like this, before, but, right. You know, if you start doing shit like this, this is shit that presidents do. And my favorite thing about this, she went out there with no wig.
Come on.
Like, she just went out
there. You know it's real when probably no wig, probably she probably had no, little to no makeup on.
I didn't know I need this in my life, but if President Oprah.
You see is it a pic?
Yeah, I got it. If President Oprah, like, would show up to catastrophes with, like, no wig and no makeup on, looking like, you know, like somebody grandmama just leaving the house, like, let me go check on the people down the street, baby. Right. I think I could use that imagery in my life.
Right. I mean, and to an extent, it makes sense. Like, I'm here. I mean, even though, truthfully, I could see if she did because it's actually like a photo op and all that stuff. But she was like, no, I'm really here because I care. So I'm not trying. I just got out of bed, brushed my teeth, put my glasses on, and was like, look, let me go check and see what's happening to the people around me.
Like, she really looked like she just came out the house. And yes. I don't mean that as any level of insult.
No, me either.
I mean, she really just looked like, man, look, let me just go check on everybody up the street and see what's going on. I don't know if she filmed this for her show or what, but you know, California just had the fires.
Right.
Now they had these mudslides, people dying and shit.
Right.
Like, this is crazy.
Right. And then this is real. We ain't talking about the fake one that happened over hundreds of people's phones in Hawaii.
A fake emergency. Yeah.
Had the people panicking and shit.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that eventually, I'm sure. But, yeah, she went on out there, man. You know, so I don't know. The more, and like I said, like I've been telling people, if she decides to run and if she does all this shit.
That's if.
It's gonna be about her building this platform over 2 to 3 years. It's not gonna be tomorrow she's the fucking president. So right. Everybody's talking, but I don't feel like they have any vision of the future.
We got a ride from Cameron, the rescue worker.
It's so sad seeing people's lives.
So I guess they gave her a ride on the tractor.
I hear a lot of people died.
Yeah, I wonder if it's for like some kind of special or something, or for something she's gonna do for a show or something.
A possibility.
Cause see, her media machine is like, people think Trump had a media machine. No. She actually has control over some shit.
Right.
She could craft an image that would, be a lot more presidential than that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. If she wanted to.
She's gonna put very, very smart people around her.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
Like somebody said, she has a motherfucking network that could actually be her own source of promotion.
Yeah, like I wonder if she had to give that up if she decided to. Because for the record, I don't think she's gonna run for president.
Mm-mm.
But I'm gonna get these jokes off while y'all are being all intimidated and scared.
Yeah, because
about it.
Like for her living at the White House is a motherfucking downgrade.
It was a downgrade for Trump too, but I think also having to give up her media companies and shit, like I don't know if she would want to do that. You know what I mean? Not to mention, like, she kind of enjoys the status of the vast majority of people liking her and not knowing her politics or caring about them that much.
Mm-mm.
Like, they know it through supposition. Like, well, she's pro this thing, or she talked about that on her show.
Yeah,
like,
so they put things upon her.
But we don't know.
Right, because she verbally have not come out and said certain things.
Right, so I don't know if she would want to go to, like, one of the most at least liked people in America to one of the least liked that quick, at least by half of America, and maybe even more. Because you know, once you put your politics on display and they can affect people, motherfuckers gonna be quick to be like, oh, this neoliberal capitalist blah blah blah, and the other people is just like, I ain't voting for no black bitch,
come on.
So it's like, it's gonna get ugly. The flu epidemic strikes all U.S. states and expects Hawaii except for Hawaii. Shout out to typos. Except for Hawaii, equally hard for the first time, as officials warn of a bad season with two influenza viruses going around. So hopefully y'all got y'all shots, but even if you did, there's a chance that you can get infected by the flu. And I've been noticing anecdotally on my social media, a lot of people got it.
Right, and been going down. I'm talking about like, they okay one day, next thing you know, they sick as a dog, because that's how the flu sneaks up on you. And the thing about a flu shot, when they give you a flu shot, a lot of times they are estimating and guessing which strain will be more prevalent. And sometimes the strain they shoot you with might not actually be the string that's going around. But even if you get the flu, if you had a flu shot, you won't be down as long. But if you had no flu shot, that's when the flu actually kicks your ass like it did mine, where you literally have, for those of you who've never had the flu, you literally have no energy to do shit. Sitting up takes your energy, putting on clothes take your energy, combing hair, brushing your teeth, like everything just zaps the energy out of you. And you know, depending on how severe it is, you literally will be out for like a week.
Yeah. So you know, be careful out there, man. People are dying and shit. 85 adults and 20 children have died so far this flu season. Y'all was reading an article about a woman in Washington that got the flu and then died like 2 days later. So she got like a infection, like a bacterial infection and stuff, and it just brought her down, and she wasn't even old or nothing. So yeah, take care of yourselves, man. If you gotta go to the hospital or something, hop on that shit right away. Don't wait till it's too late, man. Rather have you here and with a hospital bill than dead, trying to avoid some, you know, spending that cheese.
Come on. And it don't even matter if you can pay it or not. Fuck it. Long as you here, because when you die, they can't get that money
unless they throw you out in the cold like they did that woman in Baltimore. She ain't have insurance, and they just wheeled her outside the front of the hospital in a wheelchair. Like, okay.
What?
You didn't see this?
No.
Hold on, let me look it up.
Were they private or some shit?
Let me look it up so I can give you the details. But yeah, I saw that. It was like a viral study. Viral story going around on social media and stuff.
I mean, a lot of people not going, but like this, in the policies they pass, and more people are going to fucking lose. You have millions of children across our country that lost insurance because of policies that they're fucking passing. What?
A Baltimore hospital said it was investigating Wednesday after a video posted online showed an apparently incapacitated woman put out in the cold wearing nothing but a hospital gown. And keep in mind how cold it was. On Wednesday, a man who said he was a psychotherapist and a student at the University of Maryland Medical Center Midtown campus posted a video of a woman being hustled out of the hospital by staff and left at a bus stop, her possessions thrown on the street. The woman appeared to have a wound on her forehead and was wearing a hospital gown that was falling off. She grunted and shouted, it appeared to say at one point, "Please help me." The man who posted the video said it was just 30 degrees out and challenged hospital staff. "So y'all are just going to leave this lady out here with no clothes on?" He said in the video, "That is not okay." The responses of security staff are not audible in the video, but one appeared to say she was medically cleared. The spokeswoman for the hospital verified its authenticity and said it was filmed Thursday. "We share the shock and disappointment of many who have viewed the video showing the discharge of a patient from the emergency department of the UMMC Midtown the night of January 9th. Lisa Clove, a spokeswoman for the hospital, said in a statement, "This unfortunate event is not representative of our patient-centered mission. No further information about the patient or her care was available."
I don't believe you. And the thing is, I know this is kind of a PSA, but for those of you that around you, actually yelp your hospitals and find out the history of your hospitals around you, because a lot of hospitals have got like really, really low ratings and low reviews online. And if you don't know this, you won't know how they mistreat people and misdiagnose people and shit like that, because like it's a hospital. I can't think of the name of it, but it's a hospital down in Rock Hill that if something happened to me, I will never go there, because I've heard terrible things. People have died in their custody, and I'm like, fuck that, take me out the way, you know, because if they have a history of particularly brown people not treating you properly and shit like that, it's hospitals that are open that people don't know that they are barely above float as far as taking care of people and people dying in their care. That shit matters. Reviews or ratings of hospitals matter. And the thing is, they don't tell you that a lot of times when you have black and brown people that go to hospitals that serve predominantly white people, a lot of times statistically they've said that you will end up a lot of times not getting the same quality of service, even when healthcare end up getting turned down, because they said they're having outbreaks of diseases that are coming back black is because black people are getting undiagnosed and shit like that, and they're like barely taking care of them. But see, that affects everybody when people aren't treated and diagnosed and taken care of. And that goes back to the infrastructure of our hospital system, because, you know, I'm like a lot of people, you take an oath, you know, to take care of people. This is what happened when you have something dealing with people's lives that is privatized. You know, our hospitals aren't privatized, but hospitals that are privatized, you know, I don't know the laws on that. They might be like, fuck it, we don't have to take care of you, and they can sit your ass outside. People think they know the laws with a lot of this shit, but everybody don't know the laws with a lot of these hospitals, particularly if they're in like these particular networks and things like that that are outside of the public realm, you know. So for those of you out there, something you should do, because, you know, you think you know your history of your hospital, please go check them out.
Yeah, Serena Williams almost died giving childbirth because and she's Serena Williams, but she had to talk the hospital staff through saving her life, and they didn't even believe her.
Yeah, the thing about Serena Williams that really pissed me off, and they're actually having a lot of, like, I think like 700 and something women, if I'm not mistaken, forgive me if that number's wrong, started speaking up and was like, hey, I've been to the hospital, they ain't take care of me, you know. Because the thing is, they've done studies and statistics, black women die 2 to 3 times at a higher rate than white women when giving birth. They're not believed when they say they're in pain. They're blown off. She basically was like, hey, you know, I'm not feeling good, you know, y'all need to do a CTE on me and give me, cause she almost died in 2011 because of a blood clot. And so, you know, and her mother died because of the similar thing. And so she's like, hey, you know what, something's wrong, because you know your body, something's wrong, I don't feel right. She had been coughing, and she ended up getting a C-section. The C-section ended up breaking because of all her coughing, because in her lungs she ended up having like little small dots in her lungs, which actually caused her to have a hard time breathing. And she told the nurse, and the nurse basically was like, oh, she delusional from her, the medication that they've given her, she knows her body. So she basically had to have a fit in the hospital and be like, hey, y'all need to look at me. And they ran the test, basically, because I read the article. They ran the test, and they was basically like, yeah, you do got this, and they did it, but why should I have to go through this? Because the thing is,
well, actually, I have the article in front of me, right? So it was also, she has a history of this just in life.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Her mama's still alive, but her mama right. had, like, the her, same complications.
Yeah,
so
her
I apologize.
Mom's not dead, but she has a history of this just in life. Like, just as a tennis athlete, everything. And her family and whatnot. The other thing is, since she has a history of it, she knows what tests to take, and she knows what scan she needs. She thought she was having another pulmonary embolism, which is like a blood clot in your chest. So she walked out the hospital room so she wouldn't have to worry her mom. She was gasping for breath, and she knew that she needed a CT scan with contrast and IV heparin, which is a blood thinner, right away. The nurse thought her pain medicine might be making her confused. Serena insisted. Soon enough, a doctor was performing an ultrasound on her legs. I was like, a Doppler? I told you I need a CT scan and a heparin drip. She remembers telling the team the ultrasound revealed nothing, so they sent her for the CT, and sure enough, several small blood clots had settled in her lungs. Minutes later, she was on the drip. I was like, listen to Dr. Williams. So one of the most rich, famous, powerful black women on the planet, an athlete that knows her body better than anybody else, almost died, or could have died, due to just the negligence and the disbelief of practitioners when it comes to black women's bodies, which happens, you know, black people's bodies in general when it comes to the hospital industry. It doesn't matter how many studies has been done,
they
or nothing,
we have a higher tolerance of pain,
right? Not just that, but we can take more somehow. Like, I don't need to, you don't need the same treatment, you know, we'll somehow be okay. But, you know, when you look at how Erica Garner got her asthma came back and got really bad after she gave birth. You know, there's a lot of, it changes your body, but there's also a lot of complications and stuff that, you know, if the medical professional is telling most of us, well, nah, you don't need that, how many of us would have been like, okay, then I guess I don't need it? What about the money difference? How many of us would have not been able to afford that CT scan? So we would have had to be like, well, fuck it, then I guess just whatever's cheapest, you know, I guess I'll try to cough it out and see what happens. You know, so yeah, that was wild, and that was Serena Williams. So.
Right, and then when you fuck around and die, they're not going to take any responsibility or any action, and they're going to fight you tooth and nail when the people be like, hey, you were told, and you know it's a big-ass lawsuit when you die.
Right, so, you know, and a lot of us, a lot of people believe that wealth is an insulation from the things that affect people racially. And this is why you have people like Serena Williams still talking about Black Lives Matter, you know, because it's not just the things that you would think. Like, it's also shit like this.
Yeah, and I will forever believe that no matter how much money you make, no matter what your status is, no matter how rich and famous you are, no matter how many people times see you on TV, across social media, no matter how big you are, to people that are racist, you will be a nigger. And that's as far as they look. It's nothing else you can say nor do to change their minds at any period of time. You're just a nigger to them. Yeah, you got money. Yes, you can help them out. Yes, you can make them money. But in their mind, in their eyes, you're still a nigger. And that is the thought process of people that are racist. And until you understand that, shit like this is shocking and surprising to a particular lot of white folks that don't understand the racial implications behind the shit that happened in the first place, you know. With Serena Williams, you know, if she'd have been like, well, y'all doing this because I'm a black woman, everybody would have been fucking up in arms. But that's the truth.
Right. Feds resume accepting renewals from Dreamers. So apparently there was a move. The Trump administration announced Saturday that it's complying with a federal court order by allowing so-called Dreamers to renew their quasi-legal status and work permits they had enjoyed under a program that started in 2012. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, a division of the Department of Homeland Security, posted an update on its website Saturday evening saying that the renewal process for recipients of the Deferred Actions for Childhood Arrivals status would resume effective immediately despite the administration's announcement in September that it was winding down the Obama era initiative. Due to a federal court order, which who knows how long that stuff lasts, who knows what the process is, because they probably will not stop challenging it. And if it's not like a Supreme Court ruling, a lot of times it kind of doesn't mean anything. Not to mention, what are your states and local jurisdictions doing? Because many of them will violate shit like this and be like, well, we'll take it to our Supreme Court, damn bitch, because we kicking them out, you know? And most of that's, you know, as much as people talk about the deporter in chief label that they gave Obama, I think one of the things that people are missing in that is that a lot of people in our country do not want immigrants here
at all.
And it's not that's not necessarily a Democrat or liberal thing. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, even that's not even really a black or white thing. I've mm-hmm. seen black people that are stupid like that. They don't want immigrants here. And it was never going to be a clear like amnesty or Ali Ali oxen free or y'all can stay. It was that solution is never going to come because it's actually not the will of the American people.
Nope.
And until the American people stop being xenophobic, all our policies are going to be xenophobic. And it's going to, you know, and I don't have the correct solution to all this shit, by the way. I know they're never going to have open and free borders for everybody to just come on in and shit. I know that's not a feasible solution either, but I know that this was like that compromise, that negotiation, and basically the dude got shat on for it. But yeah, they even fighting this. Like, even the compromise that people feel was not good enough is too much for a lot of Americans. And that's why, Bush and them have so much support behind this shit. But, I mean, Trump and them have so much support behind this shit. This is part of what he ran on. Mexicans are rapists was his first fucking racist statement as a candidate for the presidency. So I'm not shocked at all this, but it's still very upsetting.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that it just makes you mad when people don't know the fucking history about our country, because everybody came on a motherfucking boat. Everybody's a goddamn immigrant except for Native Americans. They were here. Everybody else came on a boat. Everybody else came on the goddamn boat. So it's like, because you're here and they quote unquote legally can't put you out, fuck everybody else, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, so they're starting to accept these things, but you can't trust them because at the same time they're also raiding like 7-Eleven businesses and checking everybody's papers and immigration status. So they talk out of one side of their mouth, but they're still full-fledged trying to make sure that they send a message that you are not welcome here if you're not white and you're in this country and you weren't born here or something like that. They want to make sure that you feel under the gun, essentially.
Right, and the thing is, they would get rid of everybody else legally if they could. If they could turn around and strip black people, quote-unquote, of their papers, you know, because for a lot of white people in our country, particularly racist white people, y'all just better be glad the South lost. That's why, you know, you quote-unquote got your papers and we can't put you away, you know. But if we could change the laws, y'all motherfuckers would go back where the fuck y'all came from, too.
Trump was on Twitter basically saying that this was unfair. The court system is fighting against him, right? Because he really does think, I'm president, why doesn't everybody just do what the fuck I tell them to do?
Right, because he thought that's not how the shit worked.
Right, and it's amazing because to some extent his presidency will show people, hopefully, you know, that's probably too optimistic. Mm-hmm. It probably won't show y'all shit.
Nope.
But in general, if people are paying attention, they should be learning that there are limits to the power of the office, and even with a quote-unquote tyrant in charge, it's very difficult to get quick change on things that isn't fought back. Like, you have three different branches of our country, you know, legislative, judicial, and then you have your, you know, presidential. And you see almost all the time with his decrees, the judicial branch is like, no, you can't do that.
Right, and it's designed like that for a motherfucking reason.
Right, but what the difference is, when Obama was president, there's a lot of people that either aren't very informed politically or not very studied, and they really did think that his election was a decree on America, that he could just go there, propose ideas, and everyone would have to do them, which is not what he campaigned on, and it's also just not realistic. But he was a constitutional scholar, so he was like working with people as part of the process because we have to, not because if I could snap my fingers and be like, okay guys, no more of this shit, I just do it. But obviously that's not how the country is designed. Trump doesn't care about that shit, but essentially he keeps running into these roadblocks because he doesn't care. Because right. He just goes, I'm gonna tweet out transgender people are banned from the military. And then as the wheels start turning in that system, it's like, no, you can't do that. And then like it may take a week or two or a month or two or whatever, and then you get back and it's like, what he said he can't do. So no, and we in the military are going to operate the way we've been operating, and it's essentially fuck him until the Supreme Court or somebody tells us to do this, because
right.
A president doesn't get to just tell people what to do without it being challenged, you know. It's the same way marriage equality was challenged to the Supreme Court, like that and that ends up being the actual judgment. It's not, you know, and some people are careful, like, you know, President Obama was careful to be like, okay, how do I set up the dominoes, because when it gets challenged and goes to Supreme Court, I need the legal reasoning to be sound so that I don't have this shit overturned in my face. Trump is so careless. I have no idea if the Supreme Court will support this. And keep in mind, we will have a right-leaning Supreme Court for a long time now because of this election. So who knows if this Supreme Court will support it or not, but it's funny how he keeps getting stymied by these judges with his immigration bans and his fucking airport bans and all this shit. And then he's like mad about it on Twitter, but it's like, nigga, you never set up the chessboard so you can win anyway. You just throw shit out there. Let's see what else. Cape Town, in Africa. They might be the first city to ever run out of water.
What?
Cape Town, home to Table Mountain, African penguin, sunshine, and the sea, is a world-renowned tourist destination, but it could also become famous for being the first major city to run out of water. Most recent projections suggest it could run out of water as early as March. The crisis has been caused by 3 years of very low rainfall coupled with increasing consumption by a growing population. The local government is racing to address the situation with desalination plants to make water, seawater drinkable, groundwater collection projects, and water recycling programs. Meanwhile, Cape Town's 4 million residents are being urged to conserve water and use no more than 87 liters, which is 19 gallons a day. Car washing and filling up swimming pools has been banned. Such water related problems are not confined to Cape Town. Of course, nearly 850 million people globally lack access to safe drinking water, says the World Health Organization. And droughts are increasing. So it seems incredible that we still waste so much of this essential natural resource. In developing and emerging countries, up to 80% of the water is lost through leakages, according to German environmental consultancy GIZ.
Through leakages, which is shit that probably can be fixed.
Yeah, even in some areas of the U.S., up to 50% of water trickles away due to aging infrastructure. A growing number of technology companies are focusing their work on water managing, applying smart solutions to water challenges. But yeah, it could be the first city to run out of water. Wonder how much, like, and it seemed like a lot of it's just inefficiency. Like, we have the water, but we don't use it efficiently.
We don't, you know? Yeah. Sound like people have been treating it. They hadn't been recycling it, like, and shit like that.
Yeah, water is such a luxury to quote unquote, even though it's such a necessity.
A lot of people don't realize that. For the fact we have running water pipes here in our country is something else. And a lot of parts of the world to get water, they literally got to go to the riverbanks. You know, they got to go to the creek to get their water. Like, they have to. It's not a option. You have to walk miles away. A lot of people don't have running toilets in their places of where they live. Like, that shit is a luxury, and it's something that here in the United States people just take, you know, for granted, you know, that you will always have fresh drinkable water. And you got these motherfuckers spending $60 for shit trying to kill themselves.
Yep. All right, let's get to the next session.
We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people.
That's right, guys. Time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game, we go all around the globe. We find different articles, make us feel fucked with, and we assign point scores from 0 to 100, intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. This lady. A white woman sprays sulfuric acid into her own face and then blamed it on a non-existent black woman. A white woman in Staten Island, New York, made false claims that a black woman she didn't know sprayed her in the face with sulfuric acid, only to recant and admit that she sprayed herself. Lizzie Dunn, a resident of Outer Borough, claimed that she was attacked earlier in the week at her bus stop by a black woman in her 40s to whom she denied cigarettes and money. With her face burning from acid, she stumbled into a deli near the shop, causing a major panic inside the establishment and in the neighborhood. Soon after, local news outlets picked up on the story, acid spraying stranger before Dunn recanted. Police told the New York Daily News that the Staten Island woman has a history of self-harm, and her deception was revealed after they began pressing her for more details of her attack claims. She suffered second-degree burns on the left side of her face and scalp, the report noted. It's unclear whether or not the police will charge her with filing a false police report. 0 to 100. 100,
fuck her.
Yeah. I always worry about these ones where they blame, like, some mythical mysterious black person, right? Because I'm like,
somebody could get fucked up behind charged this. Even if they weren't there.
And anytime there's a interaction with the police with black people, warranted or unwarranted, I worry more about the unwarranted use of violence,
right?
To resolve whatever the issue is. So it's like, you put somebody in harm's way for what reason?
Right, for them to be jailed for who knows how long, bail that they may or may not make, for them to sit in there, for them to be like, oh my bad, and they just ship you out. If they say, oh my bad, and they just ship you out, and it's no, they don't want to pay you for your time, you might have lost your job, all types of shit happen, but nobody gives a fuck. Yes, charge that bitch.
Why couldn't she have just said white woman then? Like, why does it always end up being a black person that gets accused of the shit that we didn't do?
Some form of a brown person.
Yeah, well, normally it's black, Mexican, but it's right. Not white is what I'm saying.
Correct.
Yeah, you never accuse each other. And meanwhile, intra-racial crime is the highest crime for any race of people, yet somehow these stories always end up with this mysterious black person that just came up to you and did some ridiculous shit.
Mm-hmm. If a nigga did it, yeah, I understand that, but a lot of times situation like this, it don't be.
Yeah, I figured out who probably did it.
Who?
Hey, bitch, take this acid to your face. Sorry. You got any cigarettes? Protesters trash six.
I'm going back to the junkyard. Hey, hey, hey.
Anytime I hear about a fictional black person from now on, I'm just going to picture Fat Albert doing it. Protesters trash six H&M stores in South Africa amid outrage over the Coolest Monkey sweatshirt.
Oh!
Yeah, I saw a video too. Like, there was one place where they was fucking up the store, like kicking the displays down and everything. And what was the funniest part? Nobody stole anything. Like, it wasn't looting. They just went in there to be like, fuck H&M. And they left.
And then left. They didn't take shit. They was like, we protesting. All right, everybody, let's go home.
Yeah, that's a shame.
That's what happened when it was one person's job to be like, that ain't right. That person was like, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to tell you.
According to the spokesperson for the Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, I like that it spells F, like F y'all. The times of apologies for racism are over. There must be consequences to anti-black racism, period. Although the model's mother found no issue with the sweatshirt slogan, the F fought back against the racism. The F protesters targeted six H&M stores in South Africa, trashed them, according to Reuters. The protesters took to Gauteng province to launch their attack on the company. Several photos surfaced of the ransacked establishments and have gone viral. That's just too bad. 0 to 100, Karen.
Mm-mm, not fuck with it all.
Gotta say,
I don't care.
Gotta say zero
because they got insurance.
Gotta say zero. I gotta go to zero, y'all. Sorry about that. Too bad for those clothes. Mm-hmm. Too bad for those clothes.
Mm-hmm. And those shelves and those racks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those poor mannequins.
Eric Clapton apparently used to be racist. I didn't know this. Y'all knew this? Eric Clapton used to be a racist? Mm-hmm. I don't really listen to like that kind of music. No offense to it.
I've heard of him, but yeah, but I'm not a big fan of his. Like,
maybe that's the problem.
If he's duoing with somebody, but I haven't been going and be like, what's hot for Eric Clapton in these streets?
And I normally don't look up, you know, I normally don't look up shit like interviews with artists and stuff. I'm not really big into that, and that's no offense to these people, but I like the music or the movie or the thing that you do, and I'm not really into like going to find your personal stances unless it becomes news somehow.
Right.
At any rate, he apparently used to be just a plain old racist. He fell into the love black culture but not black people trope because, you know, he made his money making rock music, which black people, you know, sort of invented. So
come on,
that old thing.
I can't imagine how many black people got stripped of their wealth and their rights and then got washed and wrote a lot of these songs and performed a lot of these songs that got stole from them.
He was at a Q&A session after his biographical documentary Eric Clapton Life in 12 Bars aired. And listen, the age of receipts, boy, people brave as fuck to put shit out in the age of receipts, because you know you're gonna have to answer these questions. Not saying you shouldn't, but it's just interesting because it's like, is it worth it to you or not? You know, I don't think it'll cancel anybody or anything like that, but just, it is the public embarrassment of having to pop into, you know, like it used to be a time where you're like, oh, I'm writing a book. And the only thing you have to address is, you know, whatever's in the book or, you know, the topic of the movie.
Oh, you're writing a book. We covering everything then.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, you putting a movie out? That's cool. What about that girl you raped? It's like, you know, like it's just changed it's such a short period of time. The film that was out called The Life in 12 Bars, the show footage of him chanting racial slurs such as coons and wogs, short for gollywogs, and saying England is for white people in the 1976 concert in the British city of Birmingham.
Okay, that's a new word, gollywogs.
Gollywogs.
Yeah, it's not like something from Harry Potter.
Yeah, it ain't. Yeah, it might be new to us, but it ain't new.
I believe that, yeah.
In the video, Clapton jumped behind racist Tory MP Enoch Powell and declared that Britain must stop itself from becoming a black colony. I don't want you here in the room or in my country, he declared. Listen to me, man. I think we should vote for Enoch Powell. Enoch's our man. I think Enoch's right. I think we should send them all back. Stop Britain from becoming a black colony. Get the foreigners out. Get the wogs out. Get the coons out. Keep Britain white. I used to be in the dope. Now I'm into racism. It's much heavier, man. Fucking wogs, man. Fucking Saudis taking over London. Bastard wogs. Britain is becoming overcrowded. Enoch was stopping to send them all back. The black wogs and the coons and the Arabs and the fucking Jamaicans and fucking don't belong here. We don't want them here. This is England. This is a white country. We don't want any black wogs and coons living here. We need to make clear to them that they are not welcome. England is for white people. We are a white people, man. We are a white country. I don't want fucking wogs living next to me with their standards. This is Great Britain, a white country. What is happening to us, for fuck's sake? He's apologized over the years and saying it was his heavy drug and alcohol addiction that spurned his racist diatribe. It's interesting who's allowed to apologize and be forgiven and move on to keep operating like that. I literally have never heard of this shit. Yeah. You would think when, you know, as many people talk about him, you would think that this shit would come up all the time, but this is my first time hearing it. Maybe it does and I just not know circles.
Correct.
Anyway, he says, I was so ashamed of who I was and kind of semi-racist, which didn't make sense. Half of my friends were black. I dated a black woman. I championed black music, he said. So he was just confused, y'all. He's only semi-racist. Just had these really racist views, but he had black friends, so like, he must not have believed them.
A hollywog, a soft doll with bright clothes, a black face, with fuzzy hair, and this picture.
Hollywog, you don't mean gollywog?
Oh, gollywog, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, this picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can show it to you.
I don't think you can. I don't think it gives you the ability to do it. Put it in the chat though, and I'll link to it if you want me to show people.
Okay.
He had black friends, so he couldn't have been, you know, he's only half racist, guys. You know how it is. You get confused sometimes. Y'all ever do that? Y'all be on drugs, y'all just get confused and be racist all of a sudden. They say drugs and alcohol bring it out of you. So. Karen, what do you give it?
A motherfucking 100.
Karen gives it 100. Yeah, that's 100. Those comments, I don't know how you cannot. Oh, I'm looking at a picture of the gollywog now. Yeah,
you see
super
it
racist.
With the look with the key. I don't know which version you see, but oh my goodness.
Yeah, it looks like what you would consider the what do you call it? The coon, like just picture the old black, like the coon, basically blackface doll type imagery. Is essentially what it is, you know. Another thing white people do to pick on black
okay
people.
Yeah, you look at that doll. Oh my god,
yeah. And they're always like super duper black, like,
with the big red lips, bright white teeth,
right?
Like you got like a lot, kind of like a nappy fro.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, 100 for me as well.
Yeah, for the fact that I found out what it is, you get 200.
Mm-hmm. Protesters who pulled down the Confederate statue in North Carolina will not face charges.
Good.
During North Carolina, protesters who took down a Confederate monument in front of the city courthouse will not face charges for taking down the statue by force. In the aftermath of the August 2007 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, a group of predominantly white activists decided to take it upon themselves to remove the monument commemorating the Confederacy. Durham County District Attorney Roger Echols said Thursday, "We won't try them on felonies, only the misdemeanors." Good. According to Harold, and then they said, "Well, no felony charges will be the activists do have to deal with new misdemeanor charge of conspiracy to deface real property." According to the Herald Sun, the charges were dropped against three protesters identified as Aaron Caldwell, Taylor Cook, and Miles Spigner.
Yeah, all because they want to charge them with something. Like, they could have been like, fuck it, and just dropped everything. But they was like, we got to charge it with something.
The remaining eight will face District Court Judge Frederick S. Battaglia Jr. In a trial scheduled February 19th. I do wonder what the racial makeup of everybody being accused is, but like I said, this Confederate monument, the face and shit doesn't really matter to me that much, but I do appreciate that white people are the main ones doing it.
Come on,
like, y'all do need to take care of y'all shit.
Yeah, y'all need to be at the forefront.
So zero
some
to
of these licks.
Yeah, 0 to 100.
Zero.
Yeah, 0 to me. It sucks that they still getting misdemeanor, but fuck it, it's worth it.
Right, and that's the thing. They could have just been like, "We're gonna drop everything."
Yeah,
because that's normally what happened in these instances. But they were like, "Well, we got charged with something."
Yeah, I saw someone in the chat said, "But let them be black though." One, I don't know that all of them are white, but then two, if they are, I'm fine with that. Good, use your white privilege for some good shit, like tearing down a statue and getting away with it. You know what I mean? As opposed to burning a cross and getting away with it. Like, flip the script on that. I'm okay with this. But yeah, black people would have definitely probably suffered a harsher consequence.
Right, and they might not even drop the charges.
And that's if they're not black. I don't even know that they're not black, honestly. Because I remember black people being arrested for this when we first talked about it. And
being hunted down and kicked in the doors and shit like that, yes.
And then white people was showing up and at the police station and being like, I did it.
Yeah, they were so overwhelmed. Yeah, it happened here in North Carolina. It was so overwhelming that they was like, quick showing up. They're like, fuck it. Nope, they're going to jail. I'm going to jail too.
Right. My racist messages were reckless and unnecessary. UKIP Chiefs glamour model lover 25 apologizes over text about Prince Harry's fiance that said Meghan Seed will taint our royal family. The girlfriend of the scandal hit UKIP leader Henry Bolton has apologized for racist remarks she made about Meghan Markle, calling them reckless and unnecessary. I have to show you guys her picture. You have to see who the fuck is talking about Meghan Markle's seed will fuck up their family. Okay? It will taint the royal family. When you see the picture of Joe Marnie, it's like, who are you kidding? Don't nobody want your jeans, boo. Joe Marnie, 25, sent a series of shocking messages in which she said Prince Harry's black American fiance will taint the royal family with her seed and pave the way for a black king. One, that's... I don't even think they're in the lineage or succession like that. Like, it would literally need, like, 27 different people to die for that to happen. Anyway, speaking outside her home today, Miss Marnie told the Mail Online, I'd like to say I'm absolutely devastated by the messages that I've sent and the distress that I've caused anyone by those messages. They were unnecessary. They were reckless. They were overly exaggerated, purely for effect. They were never intended to be put in the public domain, and I'd like to take this opportunity to offer my sincere, deepest apologies to anyone I've hurt and for the distress and embarrassment I've caused my family, friends, and the party.
We don't believe you. You basically said I'm apologizing because it got caught. Bitch, fuck you, 100.
Yeah, you got caught.
And it was never meant for public consumption. Yes, because you goddamn racist and you didn't want people to know your ass was racist.
Right, right.
Don't be racist. That'll fix that issue.
Mm-hmm. The 54-year-old party leader whose relationship with Miss Marnie has also led to demands for him to quit was, was told by UKIP West Midlands MEP Bill Etheridge after the text surface, go now, go quietly, and leave us to deal with what's left. Mr. Bolton, whose relationship with Miss Marnie is under investigation by the party, said today she had been suspended immediately upon receiving this information. In a Facebook video message, Mr. Etheridge said, it appears that we are now seeing UKIP resources, which are at best scant, being used to defend Henry's private life. He said he would step down as a UKIP spokesman if Mr. Bolton, who was elected leader last September, insisted on prolonging this agony. A senior UKIP source insisted Mr. Bolton had not resigned and was not intending to tonight. Dude, look at this motherfucker, dog. You like a Harry Potter character.
Mm-hmm. She does too, look like she ought to teach.
Right. Got some goddamn nerve. But this is the kind of stuff that matter of fact, let me go to the next session because we're about to get cut off. Hold on a second, guys. I'll be right back. But yeah, she like she could be a fucking Malfoy and shit. And got some nerve talking about somebody fucking up a gene pool. And then you look at her genes. Ain't nobody like, what are you talking about? Like, y'all need some color in y'all gene pool, boo. The way y'all out here looking. But this is also kind of the thing where you know, as a black person, you kind of have to be of two minds about everything, because while it's kind of like a symbolic, or like, you know, I can see people celebrating or having fun with the joke of Meghan Markle and Nuck if you Buckingham Palace and twerking on Buckingham, and I get the jokes, and I'm not gonna ever step on people's jokes. I understand they're just having a good time, but at the same time, this is the shit that she's gonna be subjected to for the rest of her life, dealing with these fucking pieces of shit white people in this family of, you know, just colonizing, the racist, old money, nothing but the illusion of prestige ass white folks, man. Like, she got this, the life that she has to deal with. So anyway, yeah, 100 for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool, let's get into another story. How about, you know what, actually let's do trash, might as well. Wait, why can't I find the folder? Okay, yeah, we'll just do trash, because she was trash, that story was trash, everything was trash about it. So, and we'll always have more fucking with black people,
always.
They
will never disappoint y'all.
Yeah, we can't even keep up with it at this point. Trash time, where we talk about, you know, some of the people and the Me Too accusations and stuff that people been dealing with. Starting up front, this nigga Russell Simmons. He says that he is halting his hashtag Not Me campaign. And that's a shame, because I really feel like that shit was about to catch on, and he missed the wave, because I really do feel like people are starting to get tired of the Me Too movement already, and he was at the perfect time to capitalize on the hashtag Not Me response, which a lot of people were going to start doing soon, because especially as it gets into people that people like, and most people's morality only extends as far as, do I like this person or do I not like this person?
Right, and beyond that is like, they don't, everybody's kind of, well, I've heard about you, fuck you, well, when it's your quote unquote fave, you can still be like, you fucked up, dog. You fucked up.
Yeah, he missed out on the opportunity. He probably could have, if he would have stayed strong for a couple more weeks, he would have had some, like Matt Damon hashtag and Not Me and shit like that. Anyway, I mean, I'm glad it didn't work out, but, you know, he almost had it all. After the mogul's fiery crusade to clear his name over sexual misconduct allegations went mysteriously quiet, his reps told us that Simmons had instead decided that this is the time for women to speak. In November and December, he was accused of various forms of sexual misconduct, including rape and attempted rape by some 13 women. This is the thing I always say, man. When it starts out with just one thing, I feel like this is why when people push back and be like, this movement is getting out of control, I'm like, I don't think it is, because when it's just one person, everybody just goes, okay, well, that's unfortunate. We'll see. And then when it's an abusive person, normally there's more than one person. They don't just abuse one person. And when it gets to like two or three, it's like, oh, this nigga got some shady shit about him, sound like he might have done this. And when it gets to 13, to me, I'm like, oh, there's no doubt, you did that shit. 13 people that don't know each other are not just sitting around like, let's just randomly accuse this dude of this shit. Fuck you. Anyway, allegedly. Anyway, although he stepped down from his businesses, he said on Instagram he was committed to proving his innocence, and remember that message about the hashtag Not Me and all this shit. The same day, TMZ reported that Simmons had taken a lie detector test regarding an accusation from Caligula's accusation to one of his accusers. His lawyers claimed he passed it with flying colors. Okay. We'll see you in a court of law, sir. But then, but that was the last we heard of the Not Me campaign. Since then, he's posted on Instagram 3 times, each with an inspirational quote. He hasn't used a hashtag since, and there's been no further attempts to prove his innocence in the press. Somebody must have got to him and said, man, you need to cut this shit out. Yeah, Mr. Simmons' previous statements stand, and he has nothing to add to them at the time. According to his reps, it was his Not Me idea that prompted publicist and TV star Kelly Catron to tell Page Six last month that Simmons had tried to rape her in 1991. That's the other thing. When you come out and start being like, these bitches lying or never that, that's when these other people that was like, I've been holding your secret for however many long years. Let me add my voice to this, because this isn't going to go away and you need to admit you were wrong and you did these things. The Not Me thing, I'm going to do a yeah, fuck you, she told us. So, but that's what happened. I was wondering just a couple weeks ago, like, what the fuck happened to that? Because he was like, gung ho, I'm going to fight this. And now he's like, nope. Mark Wahlberg, shout out to Time's Up. Mark Wahlberg and the agency that represents him are going to give $2 million to the Time's Up fund after a pay discrepancy outcry. What happened was, because Kevin Spacey was in this movie, I think All the Money in the World or something, he had to be replaced, and they used Christopher somebody, I can't remember his last name, to film all of Kevin Spacey's scenes, and that meant they had to reshoot these scenes, and it required Michelle Williams, who was a co-star of the movie, and maybe even, I would even venture to say the real star, and Mark Wahlberg, who's also in the movie, to come back and do reshoots. Michelle Williams basically said, I'll do it for free. So she got paid scale, which is like what they would pay like an extra or whatever, like to just come. It was like less than $1,000, I believe. Mark Wahlberg played hardball and said, I want $1.5 million to reshoot this.
Woo!
So the first thing that got reported was a pay discrepancy of, oh, they paid Mark Wahlberg $1.5 million and they paid Michelle Williams less than $1,000, and the same agency represents both of them. So like, what the fuck? Like, why y'all didn't pay both of them equally? But Michelle Williams didn't want the money, you know, which I assume is because she was like, look, this shit is unfortunate. Kevin Spacey, obviously, you know, this movie is fucked up because of what he did. I'm not trying to cost the studio more money because of Kevin Spacey. It's almost like I'm victimizing everybody else because of this man. Let's just get the movie reshot. We don't have much time and get it out. Mark Wahlberg was like, ooh, opportunity to make some more money. Time's Up and many of the women that in Hollywood that you know, support and talk about that for a living and stuff, many of the activists, they were on social media like, what the fuck is this? So Mark Wahlberg gave up his $1.5 million salary, that the bonus he got, gave it all to Time's Up, and the agency gave up $500,000 of their money because they were involved in that shit. Time's Up be out here, yo, they running niggas pockets. Like, you might have started calling them Annie up, because they out here like, the fuck you just do? No, that's our money now. And I really do hope, like I said, man, it is my highest hope that this agency is run well, this organization is, like, I'm not gonna put it past these women and say they can't do it, because the ultimate thing I would love to see is them to find a way. Activism and stuff like that is always sloppy. There's always choices to be made, and there's always someone on the sideline hating, talking about how they would have did it better than you.
Right.
But if they are able to take money like this and funnel it down to women who typically would not be heard and typically not have legal resources to even be, to get any semblance of justice, then they will have won in a way that no one has done for our society as of yet. You know, using their fame and leverage and power to help people that aren't just Hollywood starlets, but like everybody. So that money could definitely go on to really help a lot of people, and I think that's pretty dope. That's dope news. So not all the times of news is bad. Rebecca Hall, by the way, she starred in Woody Allen's new film. She donated her full salary to Time's Up and apologized. Like I said, they out here, Annie up, Captain Fool, like straight up running motherfuckers' pockets.
And people are like, oh, this made me look bad?
Yeah, and I think there's going to be some residual jealousy, I think, especially for black people in this stuff, that our shit doesn't get handled this way. And I understand that.
Me too.
But I'm not gonna let that turn me against have any animosity towards this, because I feel like this movement is good. Correct. And the things that they're accomplishing are good. So I'm not gonna let that turn me off towards this or start blaming some other marginalized group for my shit. And white women are definitely complicit in that marginalization of black people. And black women get doubly, you know, as much. But even with that being said, I love the fact that they are running motherfuckers' pockets. I love it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to make it not profitable. That's what people respond to.
Right.
It needs to be not just, oh, I shouldn't have done this movie, but, you know, and I do believe the women, and Woody Allen is bad, but, you know, he wanted me to be in his picture, and I have to work. Like, no, I like the idea of, yeah, you say you sorry, but what are you putting behind that?
Come on.
Like, come to people with solutions. Like, okay, you sorry, you mad, you upset, you shouldn't have done this. You didn't run the money. You don't need the money. So now it wasn't profitable for you to be in that film. Now the next actor or actress is thinking twice about being in these fucking films.
Yes, yes. And you'll have people consider it and be like, you know what? I don't even want to be bothered.
Right. So yeah, Rebecca Hall says she's profoundly sorry. And she basically said it was the story of Dylan Farrell, who alleged that Woody Allen molested her. She said it was that story that made her, like, see it differently. And he gave her a start in her career by letting her be in, casting her in Vicky Christine Barcelona. But she, like, even with that, you know, I shouldn't have been in this joint. And she's like, this was right after the Weinstein shit came out, and I felt conflicted, but I went and did this shit anyway.
Come on.
Cause it was in my hometown. It was one day of filming. It was easy. But, she's like, after I did it, I realized there's never anything easy about any of this. And in the weeks following, I have thought very deeply about this decision and remain conflicted and saddened. I see not only how complicated this matter is, but that my actions have made another woman feel silenced and dismissed. And that is not something that sits easily with me in the current or indeed in any moment. And I'm profoundly sorry. I regret this decision and wouldn't make the same one today. The thing I want to see, is, are people truly changed by this?
Right.
And if it has an effect on other people in Hollywood. Cause, like, there's one way to keep a person like Woody Allen from operating. That's if everybody's like, I'm not going to be in your movie.
Come on.
You know? Cause you see people that claim to be down, but it's like Miley Cyrus is starring in his movie. Justin Timberlake is in his movie. It's like, how much can you really, you know, believe this dude, you know, these people when they speak this shit, but then they work with these people too. You know, and that was something a lot of people complained about during the Golden Globes. And I'm like, well, that will take time and we'll see what happens. You know, so I don't know. It feels like a step in the right direction.
I hope it is. And like you said, I hope they do good things with this money.
Yeah. All right. Aziz Ansari. Someone wrote a piece about him. I went on a date with Aziz Ansari, and it turned into the worst night of my life.
Yeah, I seen that post. Don't he do that show? I've never seen it. That everybody been talking about.
He has a show on Netflix. I haven't watched it either. I seen like one of his stand-ups. I thought it was pretty funny. But I, you know, this is one of those things too where I'm not a huge fan of the dude, and that's not shade on some like, I don't like this nigga, and I'm just saying I'm not a fan. Saying I literally just am not that big of a fan, so I don't know. Like, I didn't watch Parks and Rec. I heard it was great. I didn't watch his solo series on Netflix. I've only seen one of his stand-up specials. I thought it was straight. You know, I have no animosity towards him. At the same time, I don't have this great love for him, so that I don't feel the need to defend him or like explain how this is different or whatever. And I think people that are fans of his, and this is what everybody, when you're a fan of somebody, you try to find a way to mitigate what's happening.
Correct.
And I read the whole thing. I don't necessarily know that it's part of the, I'll read it here, but I don't really think it's necessarily the same, in the same vein as people's Me Too things.
Okay.
As far as like workplace stuff, cause it was a date that he was on in his private life.
Okay.
But it sounds like a date that went at minimum, it went really bad. And he definitely came off to me kind of like creepy and pressuring this woman, and she had a bad experience. And I think because of his reputation as the guy who gets it when it comes to women, she felt, and she seemed to be a fan, she felt like really betrayed by the idea that at the end of the day he was another dude just trying to get some pussy, which I don't know how you necessarily avoid that kind of thing. If that's all you care about, you know what I'm saying? Like, to, from her stance, reading, if her accounts are accurate, it sounds like he just wanted some pussy and was not really interested in her beyond that. And she definitely felt rejected about, you know, felt disappointed by that. The other part of this, though, that is not really up for the debate, she said no it several times, and he kind of ignores the no's on like, oh no, well that's just no for the next 3 minutes, and then I'm gonna try to get some more pussy. And then, you know, and then she's like, nope, and he's like, okay, well what about now, I'm gonna get some pussy. And I think we've accepted in our society that that's just the default for what men do,
right?
And since we've accepted that, it leads to people blaming her, like, why didn't you leave, why didn't you do this, why didn't you, you know,
instead of her like, I said no, so that should have been the fucking end of it,
right? He didn't respect her no, but people, correct, people don't realize they're already biased by saying, basically, he's a man, you went down his house, why did you expect him to respect your no? As opposed to, well, no, it's reasonable that someone could want to do one sex act and then be like, that's it, and I'm going, like, I'm either going home or I'm done for the night, but I don't, I'm not, we're not doing that, you know? Right. And she said that several times. She approached him because she recognizes camera flash. Was taking pictures at the 2017 Emmy Awards at the party with a film camera, not a digital one. I stood up, I'm like tipsy at this point, feeling really confident, I'm in a gown, and I walked up to Aziz and said, what'd you just shoot with? Grace, she's 23 years old, Brooklyn-based photographer now, but she was 22 at the time. We're not using her real name to protect her identity because she's not a public figure, she says. And sorry, brushed her off at first, but after he realized they both brought the same kind of camera to the event, an old model from the 80s, he was impressed. They flirted a little. He took two pictures of her. She snapped some of him, and then she and her date went back to the dance floor. It was like one of those things where you're aware of the other person all night. We would catch eyes every now and then. They ran into each other one last time right as Grace was leaving, and at his suggestion, she put her phone number in his phone. Ooh, she was with a date and she put her phone number. Woo! Boy, these streets out here don't play. I wonder if that dude, yeah, right, that dude reading this account, like, god damn, she played me that night.
Right, she was like, you ain't put no ring on this nigga.
Right, I thought we was in love. Anyway, when her plane landed back in New York the next day, she already had a message from him. They exchanged flirtatious banter over text for a week or so before he asked her to go out with him on Monday, September 25th. Oh, damn, they got there home. The date didn't go as planned. That night would end with Grace in an Uber home in tears, messaging her friends about how he had behaved. Babe spoke, that's the name of the website. So also, the website, I've never heard of this website before. Not saying this is whatever, but I think part of the thing with these allegations, like, because I don't think this one's going to be taken very seriously. And I'm not saying he didn't do it. I think this is one of those ones that if he doesn't respond to it, he'll mostly be okay
and it'll go away,
because it's not
bad, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not Time, it's not THR, it's not Variety yet, which they may cover it anyway. And then also, it's one allegation right now, and I'll read further, but mostly it doesn't sound like something that rose to the level of criminal shit for most people. And I think most people will write it off as, he's well liked, it was just a misunderstanding, or what I've seen mostly, why didn't that bitch leave, you know, which is kind of fucked up and victim blaming. But that's, I've seen that from a lot of people, and I don't know if that's just because they like this dude or they really believe that, and in which case I'm like, I just as Firestarter calls it, outrage flopping. Because if it was somebody they didn't, when it's Louis C.K., it wasn't, why didn't them bitches just leave the room? For some of these people, you know, and Louis C.K. is on Aziz's boy, and he didn't have any comments on it, but some people were saying, like, well, wait till you hear what comes out about him. And it's like, oh shit. So if he has a pattern of this behavior, this will just be the tip of the iceberg, but I don't think anybody really does much with the first accusation.
Nope, which is sad but true.
Anyway, the day after the incident, she wrote a long text to Ansari saying, I just want to take a moment to make you aware of your behavior and how uneasy it made me. To that message, he responded, clearly I misread things in the moment and I'm truly sorry. The mobile phone number from which his text to her was sent matches up with the details on the searchable public register. We spoke to Grace last week when we met. Ansari had just won best actor for the Netflix show Master of None at the Golden Globes, where he declared his support for the fight against sexual assault and harassment by wearing a Time's Up pin on the red carpet. Grace said it was surreal to meet with Ansari, a successful comedian and major celebrity, and she was excited for their date. Before meeting Ansari, Grace told friends and coworkers about the date and consulted her go-to group chat about what she should wear to fit the cocktail chic dress code that he gave her. She settled on a tank top, dress, and jeans, and she showed me a picture. It was a good outfit. After arriving at his apartment in Manhattan on Monday, they exchanged small talk and drank wine. It was white. I didn't get to choose and I prefer red, but it was white wine. Then Ansari walked to the Grand. I don't know why they have these weird details in here. Let me get to the part that matters, because
I mean, is this a Yelp review? I mean, right, you know, that's off topic,
right? She said basically he was real quick at the meal. Like, she thought maybe he was having a bad time because like he was immediately like, all right, let's get the check, let's get out of here. And you know, to her, she was like, is he having a bad time? Like,
yeah, does he want to end the date? Right.
They walked two blocks to his apartment building. When they walked back in, she complimented his marble countertop. So she went to his place. According to Grace, Ansari turned the compliment into an invitation. Cause she said he had nice countertops. He said something along the lines of, how about you hop up and take a seat? Within moments, he was kissing her. In a second, his hand was on my breast. Then he was undressing her. Then he undressed himself. And she remembered feeling uncomfortable how quickly things escalated. When Ansari told her he was going to grab a condom within minutes of the first kiss, she voiced her hesitation explicitly. I said something like, whoa, let's relax a sec. Let's chill. She says he then resumed kissing her, briefly performed oral sex on her, and asked her to do the same thing, and she did, but not for long. It was really quick. Everything that was pretty much touched and done within 10 minutes and hooking up, except for actual sex. She says Ansari began making a move on her that he repeated during their encounter, which is he took his fingers and he formed like a V shape. Okay. And he would put it in her mouth and throat and then go straight for my vagina and try to finger me, the move that she called the claw, which I mean sounds maybe awkward. I don't know, maybe some people are into that. I don't, you know,
you never know, right?
That's just one of those, like, it wasn't her thing, so I don't know if you know, and under the pretenses of a date where y'all just made out, I don't know that he would read that as like, you know, I'm a assault this bitch, you know, or and vice versa, you know. I don't know that other women would read that as like, look at this nigga trying to be creepy. Ansari also physically pulled her hands towards his penis multiple times throughout the night. From the time he first kissed her on the countertop onward, he probably moved my hand to his dick 5 to 7 times. He really kept going down after kept doing it after I moved it away. The main thing was that he wouldn't let her move away from him. She compared the path they cut across the apartment to a football play. It was 30 minutes of me getting up and moving and him following and sticking his fingers down my throat again. It was really repetitive. It felt like a fucking game. Throughout the course of this short time in the apartment, she said she used verbal and nonverbal cues to indicate how uncomfortable and distressed she was. Most of my discomfort was expressed in me pulling away and mumbling. I know that my hand stopped moving at some points. I stopped moving my lips and turned cold. That's another thing, like, involving consent that we don't really talk about in general.
Come on.
But it's also because of, you know, because of patriarchy. I feel like the role that most men think we are to play in sexual intercourse is to be the aggressor.
Right.
And women have been taught that it's okay to want sex, but to act like you don't. And then, like, and we put ourselves in, and, like, we teach girls this. I'm not saying.
Yes, we do.
I'm not saying women like this. I'm saying women have been taught, like, well, no. If you want sex, just, you know, you gotta kind of make them work for it and shit like that. So, you know, I remember saying this a long time ago on the show. It is fucking weird that we find a conversation more intimate than sex.
Right!
Like, a fact that we can't have a clear conversation on, like, listen, this is how I feel about this thing, and this is how you feel about this thing, here are my rules for this shit, and this is why, you know, so I, you know, like, we need to be clear. And since, but if you, like, say what, like, for example, like a condom, there are people that haven't worn a condom during sex because the conversation is awkward. But, like, what's more awkward than an STI? You know, what's more awkward than pregnancy? But yet I know people who find the conversation more awkward than the fucking sex.
Right. And in my opinion, that boils down to the average person is not mature when it, even adults, quote unquote, as they still treat sex as when they're teenagers.
Right.
And in my opinion, grown ass adults feel as though if we talk about this, we're, particularly with men and some women, we're going to kill the mood. I might not want it anymore. This conversation isn't sexy. You're actually stopping the flow. When the reality is, after I become intimate with you, is the wrong time for me to be like, well, I should have did this, this, that, and other. And not blaming anybody for anything, but you go, okay, I should have told him, you know, I prefer the condom, or right. I should have told her that I, you know, liked it like this or liked it like that.
Well, also people freeze up. Like, everyone's response isn't the same, right? So, correct. Like, some people, if you're sexually aggressive towards them, they freeze up.
Right.
Some people are, like, she had nonverbal cues, which leaves this space, this area for people to be like, I didn't pick up on the cues. Now, I'm not saying that he should have or should not have. I don't think we even teach sex that way. Like, we don't say this is how a person's body will respond, and this is, you know, this is how you know they're into it or whatever. And some of the shit we teach is flat out wrong.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we tell people sometimes, like, oh no, she's saying no, but she really means yes. Men and women appropriate that thing, you know?
Right, which is a problem. And for a lot of people, men and women, they don't understand what consent is.
Right.
I initially might say yes, but at any point in time, I could turn my yes into a no. Even if we are in the middle of the act, I can say no, I don't want to do this.
Right. Or you can say no to certain acts, or you can say right. No to, like, I just wanted to make out tonight. All right. Here's the other thing though. There's also a bunch of shit where people don't say no.
Correct.
Now, and what I found the most interesting about the whole Me Too thing, and even social media in general, is that we're getting an insight into people's minds that are experiencing things that we won't experience. So, like, when you see people talk about, well, this is how I really felt about this interaction, it, to me, instead of rejecting them and being like, well, motherfucker, you should have just said something, I'm like, oh wait, have I ever had an interaction like this? Have I put someone in this position and not been aware of it? Like, now I know the other side of it. Like, I brought up with the whole street harassment thing, and we had that neighbor that used to stay in the car. And I'm like, I don't know if she just don't, she's racist towards me because I'm a black dude, or she's scared of me because I'm a black dude, or something's happened to her in the past, or she thinks I'm going to say something. I don't know. But these are things I would have never considered before social media, because I wouldn't have had that perspective. The only perspective I would have had is, white women be racist, that bitch racist, she don't like black people, she don't want to see me come out my car. Well, now I have another way to view this, where I'm like, oh wait, maybe it wasn't as simple as I think. Not saying it wasn't, like, it could have literally just been she was racist, but it might have also been a bunch of other shit that I don't think about.
Right. And the thing is, that goes back to how we're taught, because the thing is, a lot of dudes aren't taught to actually pay the woman attention. It's like, I want pussy, the end. They're not, that's the goal. They're not taught to pay her body. Is she tensing up? How does her face look? Look at her response to how she's doing. Does she enjoy this? Does she not enjoy this? The goal is the pussy. It does not matter what tactics I use to get there. It does not matter if she wants it or not. Those aren't taught to men.
Well, also, we tell men to basically, like, oh, you take pussy. Women give it away. You know, in these, obviously, we're talking heteronormative terms. Right. But I would even say this extends to pretty much all men are taught kind of this, you know, in a lot of ways. I'm not saying all men take to it, or that all men are even on that end of the spectrum of being the sexual aggressor, but we definitely teach children, even, like, this is the way for you to have sex. And we teach men to be like pioneers of having sex, like, go plant your flag, go sow your seeds, go spread the women. We teach, like, you should not want sex unless it's with, like, your husband to procreate. And we know it's not realistic, but we basically give people are complex, women are complex about the idea of even having sex.
Right.
So there is this huge area of around consent where we've taught people, literally, if you want sex, act like you don't, and if you don't want sex, act like you don't. So the whole time, so then there's like, oh, then we teach the kid, the boys, like, well, look, if you approach a woman that acts like she don't want sex, she's just playing hard to get. She don't really mean it. She don't. And so we as a society put this area out here full of confusion, and then have people go out and do this shit. Now it's gonna get worse in a second, so I'm not, this is just the initial parts of this that she's talking about, and I'm like, I can see how she would feel uncomfortable and he wouldn't know.
Right.
As of this moment.
Right. And it's one of the things to where me and you kind of talked about this when we get to the Me Too movement. A lot of men panic because for the first time they have to fucking think, and they have to say, hold up. Most of women's lives, for everything they do, particularly straight women, when it comes to males, you have to constantly, no matter if you want to or not, fucking consider his feelings. You got to consider his feelings, how you have to be emotionally connected to this person to understand things. Men are not taught to have sexual sensitivity to women. You aren't taught to feel her cues, see how she feels. Is she flowing with you? Men are not taught to ask, are you okay? Are you comfortable? Do you want to do this?
Like, well, we also teach men like, oh, she will come around. You know what I mean? Like, we teach men that, like, oh, well, she wasn't into it, but like, you know, she gonna come around. You just gotta do your thing. She'll, you know. And that's part of it too. Cause like, it's not just that they don't know, is what I'm saying. It's not just that men don't know. I think men have been told, like, just ignore it. Like, it's not like, oh, I just didn't pick up on the cues. I think to a large part that may be some of it, but to a large part, we've been told like, oh, shit, that women are going to not give you the cues on purpose, but they really do want you to fuck them deep down.
Right. And the thing is, a lot of that leads to later on women saying, hey, he raped me.
Right.
And the dude's like, I don't know what happened, because at that time she consented, quote unquote, because you have to think of the structure of a man versus a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You piss him off, he gets mad, all of a sudden you're dead. You piss him off, he gets mad, all of a sudden he fucking fucks you up and punches you in the face.
Or like, your adrenaline kicks in. I'm not even saying it has to be a physical threat. Your adrenaline kicks in, fight or flight kicks in.
Correct.
Some people shut down. Some people think, well, let's just get this over with. You know, it's like how people think about a robbery, a mugging. A lot of us think like, okay, if you pull a gun on me, I'm gonna go motherfucking John McClane and disarm your ass and then flip the gun on you, motherfucker. I'll punch you in your face like Batman. But most of us haven't been in that situation yet.
Correct.
So, and you really don't know yourself till you're in the situation. And when someone pull that gun on your ass, you might freeze the fuck up. You might piss your pants. You might just be like, just take whatever you need. Like, you really don't know. And a lot of people suppose shit, but they don't know. And it doesn't matter how much fucking testimony of survivors and shit we get where people are like, listen, this is what happened to me. I froze up. Or I just complied because I was scared and I thought he would get violent. Or
right.
I was scared he was gonna kick me out of his house at 3 a.m. I have a way home. Like, there's a lot of compromising positions that people put in where they have to negotiate this. And then what do? We turn around and blame those people for even being in a compromised position in the first place, which of course immediately should go to the, well, aren't we then all agreeing that men are trash? Because you can't say that you should never be in a compromising position with this person and at the same time be like, but this person isn't a piece of shit. All these people aren't a piece of shit. I've saw people going, you don't go down someone's house on the first date. And I'm like, so then you are saying that men are all pretty much rapists.
Right.
Cause it's the only way you come to that conclusion. You know, don't be offended at that conclusion of men are trash and also be on this, but don't go down this house on the first date shit. Cause you're saying the same thing.
Right. And so what you're also saying is that straight women shouldn't even fuck with men. I mean, because, you know,
right,
anything can happen to you. These bitches be out here with all this pussy in
it. And I'm gonna blame you.
Right. If he whoop your ass cause you said no, that's your fault. If he punches you in the face cause you didn't give a telephone number, return a text, that is your fucking fault, bitch.
So as of right now, like I said, we're early in the story, but to me, I'm reading this as a 40-year-old man, he just trying to fuck. And that to me, that's like, whatever she thought they had through text, whatever the fuck he acted like, the way he acted on the date, the way with the fingers in the mouth, got her back to the, he was like, I'm trying to fuck this chick tonight, period. I don't care about anything else.
And maybe just me, he could have been like, hey, I just want to have sex with one, fuck.
Oh yeah, he could have said like, that like, out loud. Like, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like before we had, hey, I'm letting you know right now, if you're not down for this, I'm cool and I'll get you back home, but this is what I'm about tonight.
Yeah, like I don't know what the dynamics of famous people is with like Tinder and shit like that, but you know, if you treat a person that is not interested in just fucking you as a person that's just interested in fucking you, you end up with situations like this as well, because people ain't always into that shit. Like, every date isn't designed to get you some pussy. Every conversation isn't designed to get you some pussy, but a lot of niggas treat it that way. And maybe as a famous dude, maybe he's tried this a bunch of times. Who knows?
Right. And my thing is, and it's funny though, because you will have, it's dudes out there, they're very, very straightforward how they feel. Mm-hmm. Like that, and they don't code it. They're like, look, I'm here to fuck, or look, I'm here to do this, I'm here to do that. And society has also taught women that, I hear you, but that don't, like, that's not what you mean. Mm. Like, and that can
so
be.
So, like, you could say, I'm trying to fuck, and they'll be like, well, no, clearly you don't mean just fucking.
Right.
And he does.
Right. And he's being straightforward and frank with you. And for a lot of women, that frankness is you being too mean, or you being too harsh, or why are you telling me how you feel about this? And that's also something else too, that women don't, that society doesn't talk about, that complicates the shit too, because he's being front with you, up front with you, and you're not taking him seriously. He's been like, look, this is how I feel.
Right. That's possibly what happened. I don't know. I think since he hasn't quote unquote put out his side of it or defended himself, which I'll tell you this much. If there are other women, I probably would guess that he's not gonna defend himself, because that seems to be the trigger for other women coming forward whenever these motherfuckers be like, I didn't do that, and you just tripping and nothing happened, and then all of a sudden like six more women are like, he did that shit to me too. So if that's a thing that he does, then we may not ever see a defense if it's a thing that he constantly, that he's done a lot. But if it's not, I would be interested in what those text messages were like over that week or so. Cause maybe we do see him being upfront. Cause she is 22. Maybe we do see him being upfront. Like, I just want to fuck you, and I don't really like I'm just tolerating, ha ha ha. But when you get to this town, I expect to be fucking you, and that's really what this conversation is. Like, I looked at you at that party and wanted to fuck, and that's it. You were never more than that to me, because I'm, you know, I'm a famous man. I feel like you were into me, or you're a fan. And I feel like I can fuck you. I don't have to really respect or treat you any better than I would somebody I was just trying to hook up with at a bar.
Right. And regardless of if he's upfront or not, that does not excuse anybody's behavior once
even if you interact with each other. Here's the thing, right? If you're upfront, everybody that's upfront runs this risk of being rejected. And I mean this and I really do mean this on both sides. And I'm not saying it's equal, but I mean it on both sides. Men don't want to come out and say, I'm just trying to fuck you, because the average woman will be like, that's not what the fuck I want out of this relationship. Like, you're a seasoned Zari, but you ain't The Rock, you know what I mean? Like, it's very few, like, you ain't Kofi. You can't just come up to me and be like, I'm trying to be balls deep in you tonight, and I go, oh, swoon, can't wait to go home. Like, even your average woman, like, not famous, not the hottest woman in the world, even the average woman gets offered dick on the daily so many fucking times that it's not so goddamn flattering that a famous dude want to offer some dick. It's like, okay, famous dick, I'm not getting anything out of this. You know, it's like people talk about Harvey Weinstein, and they used to be like, well, you know, these women go in there and they try to fuck them for these roles and shit. And it's like, if these women were fucking people for roles, they wouldn't have to fuck Harvey Weinstein.
Come on.
Like they just fuck like Matt Damon or George Clooney or something. Like, they just fuck somebody that they really did want to fuck and be like, can I get a role in your movie? Like, it wouldn't happen by like, let me go up to this motherfucker. Anyway, the point being that, I think in our minds we had this idea of like, oh, this dude is famous and rich and he says, I'm trying to fuck. And women just drop all their plans for the evening, and now they fucking this dude. And I don't think women are as blown away by the offer of dick as people think they are.
Come on, and people fail to realize that. You see one dick, you see them all. They don't change. They might be bigger, thicker, smaller, whatever, but a dick is a dick to a woman, like you said, because we offered it more consistently.
And somebody will fuck him. I'm not saying yes. There are no women. I'm just saying, if you're up front with, I want to fuck, there's a lot of women that will say no. And they don't want to risk the no. So it's just like, well, you know, I'm into you. Let's go on a date or whatever. You know what I mean? But yeah, there's a lot of women that will just fuck some famous nigga. That's not, it's just those women are also the women that these dudes want sometimes, you know, cause they might end up on Groupie Tales.
Come on.
Back to the story. But this, I wasn't even gonna read this story, but it is a good, I think we can have a good conversation based off of it. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm reading it. She said she gave a lot of nonverbal cues. Wait, why did this article move without me moving? Okay, gave a lot of nonverbal cues about how uncomfortable and distressed she was. Most of my discomfort was expressed in me pulling away and mumbling. I know that my hand stopped moving at some points and I stopped moving my lips and turned cold. Like, once again, like I said, a lot of dudes just don't care. Like, if you don't flat out tell them no, they don't care. And they will fuck you as you basically act like a lifeless corpse, because hey, you didn't say no, and that's all I've learned of consent, and that's the only thing that I would consider wrong is if you said no. Whether he noticed her reticence or knowingly ignored it is impossible for her to say. I know I was physically giving off cues that I wasn't interested. I don't think that was noticed at all, or if it was, it was ignored. The other thing dudes do in this situation, they'll gaslight you. So like, if you're like, hey, I said no, calm the fuck down, what, you're not, you gonna try to rape me or something? They'll be like, whoa, why are we acting all, I wasn't doing that, like, you know, you were into this, you know, like that kind of thing. So, and then keep in mind, they had apparently made out some 10 minutes ago, so to him, he's probably like, this is a natural progression, we going to fuck, clearly you didn't shut me down right away, so it's just about me getting you there, quote unquote.
Yes.
He wanted to have sex. She said she remembered him asking again, where do you want me to fuck you? While she was still seated on the countertop, she says she found the question tough to answer because she said she didn't want to fuck at all. I wasn't really even thinking of that. I don't want to be engaging with that with him. But he kept asking, so I said, next time. And he goes, oh, you mean second date? And I said, oh yeah, sure. And he goes, well, if I poured you another glass of wine now, would it count as our second date? He then poured her a glass and handed it to her. She excused herself to the bathroom soon after. She spent about 5 minutes in the bathroom collecting herself in the mirror, splashing herself with water. Then she went back to Ansari. He asked her if she was okay. I said, I don't want to feel forced because then I'll hate you, and I'd rather not hate you, she said. She told the website babe.net that at first she was happy with how he reacted. He said, of course, it's only fun if we're both having fun. The response is technically very sweet and acknowledging the fact that I was very uncomfortable verbally in that moment. He acknowledged that I needed to take it slow. Then he said, let's just chill over here on the couch. This moment particularly significant to Grace because she thought that would be the end of the sexual encounter. Yeah, because she told him, I don't want to feel forced. And to a dude that's trying to fuck, that doesn't mean, oh, we're not gonna have sex. It's just, oh, you don't want me to, like, I'm being too rough or too aggressive. I'm still gonna try to fuck, but now I'm gonna be nicer about it. You know
correct.
What I mean?
Correct.
Her remark about not wanting to feel forced had added a verbal component to the cues she was trying to give him about her discomfort. When she sat down on the floor next to Ansari, who sat on the couch, she thought he might rub her back, play with her hair, something to calm her down. I don't really know why what would make her think that at that point in this juncture after the way everything had gone, but okay. He instructed her to turn around. He sat back, pointed to his penis, and motioned for me to go down on him, and I did. I think I just really felt really pressure. It was literally the most unexpected thing I thought would happen at that moment because I told him I was uncomfortable. So maybe he thought she didn't want him to take the pussy, quote unquote, but she was still down with everything else, and they had already made out and done oral sex on each other. I don't know.
Right, his thing was, well, okay, you want me to fuck you, but we could do oral.
Right. And if she wouldn't, and if he said, well, suck my dick then, and she didn't say no, he's like, well, then obviously this is the encounter that she envisioned, right? We both kind of are still want to fuck, obviously. Soon he pulled her back up on the couch, and she would tell her friend via text next day, he made out with me again and says, it doesn't look like you hate me. So maybe he's like, so now I'm not forcing you because you're kind of into making out. You just suck my dick. We cool. Halfway into the encounter, he led her from the couch to a different part of his apartment. He said he had to show her something. Then he brought her to a large mirror, bent her over, and asked her again, where do you want me to fuck you? Do you want me to fuck you right here? He ran his penis against her ass while he said it. Pantomime and intercourse. Yep, that part is kind of a lot, but
right.
You know, I guess he was, unless she was gonna say no, I don't want to fuck at all, then he was gonna continue to try.
Yeah, because some men, people, period, when it comes to this, especially the quote unquote aggressor, are like, I'm not gonna quote unquote take no for an answer, quote unquote.
Also, I can see him thinking like, her, since she flit and flat out say no, we're not having sex.
Right.
Oh, she means take it slower. She means don't be as aggressive. This is more about us, you know, we need to make out longer. We need more foreplay. Cause we also teach people that too. Like, oh, this is not a no. This, cause she didn't want to hit him with a firm, like, hell no, nigga. It was kind of a like, oh, well, you like to take things slow. You don't want to feel forced. So that means you don't want, you want to be eased into it, but you still want this, right? Anyway, I just remember looking in the mirror, seeing him behind me. He was very much cop in the moment. I obviously very wasn't. After he bent me over, when I stood up and said, no, I don't think I'm ready to do this. I really don't think I'm ready to do this. And he said, how about we just chill? But this time with our clothes on, they got dressed side by side on the couch they laid and chilled on. And he turned on an episode of Seinfeld she never seen before. Some of these details. That's when the reality of what's going on sank in. It really hit me that I was violated. I felt really emotional all at once when we sat there, that the whole experience was really actually horrible. While the TV played in the background, he kissed her again, did the V move with his fingers again, and tried to undo her pants. She turned away, and she remembers feeling in a different mindset at that point. I remember saying, you guys are all the same. You guys are all the fucking same. I'm sorry. Asked her what she meant. When she turned to answer, she says he met her with a gross, forceful kiss. After the last kiss, Grace stood up on the couch, from the couch, moved to the kitchen island where she left her phone, said she would call herself a car. He hugged her and kissed her goodbye. Another aggressive kiss. He was really trying to, he was like, I'm not giving up. You are going to fuck me tonight. When she pulled away, he finally relented and insisted that he call her the car. He said, it's coming, but just tell them your name is Essence, which is a name he joked about using as a pseudonym in his sitcom. She teared up in the hallway outside his place, pressed the down button on the elevator, got in the Uber, cried the whole ride home. At this point, I felt violated. The last hour was so out of my hand. And his representatives haven't responded to her account. She compares sexual mannerisms to those of a horny, rough, entitled 18-year-old. She says so to her friends via text after the date and said the same thing to me when we spoke. But Aziz isn't an 18-year-old, he's 34-year-old actor, the comedian of global renown, who's probably done more thinking about the nuances of dating and sex in the digital age than practically anyone else. He wrote a book about it called Modern Romance, and it was a New York Times bestseller. Ansari built his career on being cute and nice and parsing the signals women send to men and the male emotions that result in turning them into award-winning Madison Square Garden feeling comedy. Most people first saw him when he was Tom Haverford on Parks and Rec, fan favorite, whose absurd, hilarious phrases were made to be mean, who hasn't said treat yourself once or twice. At that time, he branded himself as a witty, woke alternative to the stereotypical douchebag bro. His early 2010 routine paints him as the kind of guy who strikes out because he actually respects women. And then as he rose to prominence, he focused less on his own sexual disenfranchisement and more on pressing societal issues like racism, sexual assault, a move that has earned him tons of praise. He was called by Refinery29 a certified woke bae. In the second season of Master of None, one episode includes a macho TV food guy named Chef Jeff, who gives Ansari's character Dev a huge career opportunity before being accused of sexually inappropriate conduct by a bunch of women. Discussing the storyline, Ansari said he wanted to examine what happens when much loved characters are revealed to be creeps, making all around them who don't speak out complicit. So it was like, okay, what if this is one of those type of guys, we just get the audience to love him, and then we pull the rug out from under them at the end and reveal he's actually not a good dude. Speaking to Babe, Grace mentioned the glaring gap between his comedy and behavior, his comedy persona as behavior. She experienced in the apartment as a reason why she didn't get out earlier. Yeah, that was the thing, because a lot of people were like, why didn't you just leave? And I was thinking, like, if she's a fan of his, she really might think, like, it's like be giving him the benefit of the doubt, or like, mm-hmm. oh, he's not, he's clearly just misunderstanding me, or clearly I wasn't forceful enough earlier, but now I just let him know and he's gonna respect that and we're cool. Mm-hmm. And that shit is on the stage. It's not necessarily the same. He was trying to fuck like almost any other horny dude. He wasn't being woke feminist bae at that moment. He was being trying to get some pussy dude, you know. Not to say that you know woke people ain't never trying to get some pussy, but just saying in general, like, that shit is a stage persona.
Correct.
Anyway, she says, I didn't leave because I was stunned and shocked. This is not what I expected. I seen some of his shows, read excerpts from his book, and I was not expecting a bad night at all, much less a violating night and a painful one. In the Uber home of his apartment, Grace texted a friend, I hate men. I had to say no a lot. He wanted sex. He wanted to get me drunk and then fuck me. She texted another friend after she got back to the apartment. I'm taking a bath. I'm really upset. I feel weird. Her roommate, who they stuck to, didn't see or talk to Grace until the morning after. The roommate asked how it went right away. She said it was awful. It didn't feel good at all. Grace filled her roommate up in details. I guess it ended up getting really fucking weird, really fucking quick. She was really shaken up about it. Another friend texted her and she told her she was so upset. So she said she sent the next day groggy and miserable. When they asked, she told her coworkers that the day had gone poorly. She also, yeah, she had been telling everybody because she was going on a date with this dude. She probably thought it was going to be much cooler than this. Like, it didn't sound like she was on some, like, I can't wait to fucking season sorry shit. But, right. Like, you know, but, like, she liked him as a persona or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she got let down by the fact that he's just a horny dude trying to fuck her and didn't see her as much more than that.
Correct.
It was fun meeting you last night. I'm sorry, sent her on a text on Tuesday evening. Last night might have been fun for you, but it wasn't for me, she responded. You ignored my clear nonverbal cues. You kept going with advances. She explains why she is telling him how she felt. I want to make sure you're aware so maybe the next girl does have to cry on the ride home. I'm so sad to hear this, he responded. Clearly I misread things in the moment and I'm truly sorry. That's the last contact she had with Ansari, and that night in his apartment was the last time she saw him until she watched him win on the Golden Globes. Now here's the thing. I don't know why they would continue to text after that necessarily. If she felt that way about it and if he truly was sorry, I don't know what the next step is. Cause if it hasn't risen to the level of like criminality where you're gonna press charges or something and you clearly were creeped the fuck out by this nigga, if he would have kept texting, that would have been to me worse.
Right.
If he, like, that would have been another violation of that no, to be like, well, look, we should go on another date, or let me make it up to you, or whatever. Like, nope. Dude, like, clearly y'all don't, if I'm taking you at face value, and you're a season, I'm sorry, at the best reading of the scenario, you clearly didn't read her groove.
Right, so there's no reason to have further communication with you.
Right, so I don't know why that would necessarily be tossed in as kind of a jab at him. It seemed like he should have backed off. Like, I would, if I misunderstood somebody that much, I'm completely fine being like, we should probably just not communicate. Anyway, she says her friends helped her grapple with the aftermath of him winning the Golden Globe and shit. It took me a really long time to validate this as sexual assault. I was debating if this is an awkward sexual experience or sexual assault, and that's why I confronted so many of my friends and listened to what they had to say, because I wanted validation that it was actually bad. For Grace, the Golden Globes brought events back to the forefront. It was actually painful to watch him win and accept an award, and absolutely cringeworthy he was wearing a Time's Up pin. I think that started a new fire, and it kind of made it more real. She said, I believe that I was taken advantage of by Aziz. I was not listened to and ignored. It was by far the worst experience with a man I've ever had. And Nazari's team has not responded yet. Well, I don't know. Like, I don't think, I think if there's more people come forward, then you'll see the story change around him.
Yes.
As of right now, though, between this one woman and one dude, I think the vast majority of people are not gonna, think that is sexual assault.
They're not gonna think she's been violated,
right? I'm not saying that's fair or not. And then I think because of the wording that she chose, even in the article, and that if we believe her, then the words she chose during that discussion, they weren't firm, like, absolutely not, this is not happening, no. Most people will take that as, well, he just didn't understand, because he'll get the benefit of the doubt because most people like him. but it's definitely a it's definitely a messy ass situation, you know. And I think depending on how much you like the dude is how much whatever grace you're willing to extend them.
Yeah, and that's the thing, a lot of dudes don't want to be in these quote-unquote messy situations. And the thing is, society always, we talked about this before, society always teaches women to protect yourself, doesn't society teach men to protect themselves too?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't teach men, quote unquote, don't put yourself in this situation, don't you know, don't have it where your actions can be questioned, don't have it where people are second guessing you, don't be aggressive when you don't know, ask for consent, continually ask for consent, you know, until you put your dick in, even after you put your dick in sometimes, but like, are you okay with this? Is this all right? Can I touch you here? Can I feel you there? You know, constantly ask, because at any period of time, this person, that yes can become a no.
I look, you know, on this show I've said many times, and I don't mean this as a slight, or this is really more about our society and more about how we teach men. We shouldn't be teaching men, we're not at a point, not that we shouldn't be, but we are not at a point where we can have a conversation with men about like, well, listen, this is just wrong, so that's why you shouldn't do it. We're not even at that point. We're at the point where we have to say, for self-protection, if you believe that men are just being accused of any old thing and that they're being criminalized and thrown away and they didn't do anything wrong or it was a misunderstanding, then you should be seeking as much clarity in all your sexual encounters as possible.
As possible.
Not because you respect women, because let's face it, many folks don't, or even if they say they do, in practice they don't, right? And society kind of makes people feel like they don't have to. Okay. Well then, instead of you complaining on the back end about bitches always trying to catch niggas and do that, why wouldn't you just be like, well, I want to go into this situation as clear as possible, you know, as two partners engaging in an activity together. And I don't mean this like, I don't mean the same thing as like when people had those agreements where it's like sign this agreement, which is basically like a I can rape you agreement. I'm talking about a fucking like affirmative consent is what it's called, you know, where you're like, hey, like, is it okay if we do this, that, and other? And maybe that's not as sexy in people's mind.
Mm-mm.
And there's no TV version of this. Right. There's no
and
movie version of this. There's right. no book version of
and
like.
And it's not porn.
Right. And it doesn't feel hot and all this shit. I get it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, people's fantasies and shit. Those are, whatever the fantasy is you watching on porn, those are two consenting adults that signed a contract that went to go do some shit. And we've even found out some of the stuff that happens on those sets. People are like, I didn't agree to that part.
Correct.
But the point being, like, in your personal life, if men are refusing to be like, well, I should just do this because I want to be a considerate, kind person towards the people that I engage in sex with, then why not just be like, well, out of protection for yourself, take that no as no. Take that. You know, you getting, if you're confused on the cues you're getting, sit down and be like, hey, so just to be for the record, you don't want to fuck. You just came down here to watch Netflix or whatever.
Right.
The fuck.
And that's okay. But that's the conversation. It's not sexy. That's the conversation. People talk about the kills the mood. That's the conversation. And it's something simple as, hey, you know, I wear condoms. Even men are consistently with condoms. Hey, I wear condoms. I'm not going to fuck you without a condom.
Well, here's the next level though, right? Here's the next level that I think, on the other side of this, that, is, you know, the ugly part, but it's the truth. A lot of times people don't want to say no to this dude because you don't know. And that part can never really be fixed.
Correct.
Because literally you don't know if this person's scared. And that's just a reality you're going to have to live with. You have to hope that by being clear in communication, you'll know for, you know, like, hey, if this is not comfortable, I need you to let me know, because I'm not into like violating somebody or like that thing. And there's some people that are like, that's the sexiest thing a man could do. But there's some people that's like, you know, like, oh, this cuck, like, I don't want to fuck this nigga no more. I don't know, but I'd rather take the chance with rejection on both sides. Because the other thing is, if a woman tells you like, listen, I'm not trying to fuck you, like, I enjoyed dinner and I enjoyed coming, seeing your house, but I'll go home right now. That's also that risk, because that dude might get cold and be like, yeah, get the fuck out. you wasting my time, bitch. Like, you don't know, because dudes forever pull the rug of niceness under the guise of chivalry, right? Like,
come on,
I was nice to you because I thought I was about to fuck. I don't really like your ass. I didn't want to hear that story about your high school or what you do for a living. I like, there's always this underlying thing with male women interaction, at least for certain straight people, there's always that underlying thing that we have all the time where it's like, is he being nice to me because he's trying to fuck me,
right?
Or is he just being nice to me because he's a nice person or whatever? And I know I run into that shit all the time, you know, where it's like, where I'm like, no, I just respect you, that's it. Like, we cool, that's, at no point is it crossing my mind like, and now the fuck, you know what
right,
I mean,
right?
But the fact that there's a lot of people that question that shows you how much of the familiarity between men and women and heterosexual heteronormative pairings and whatnot, how much of those relationships is really about fucking. Like, my niceness was about fucking,
right? And it's one of the things too, for like, for me, and something that I found out is that I am just a happy, jovial person, and I smile and I'm nice to everybody, and your dick ain't the special dick that I'm just smiling and looking at today, but for the fact that I smiled and looked your way and bared my teeth, all of a sudden I want to fuck you. And there's a lot of dudes that I just walk by and ignore, and then you gotta hear the, well, you ain't shit bitch behind you as you walk right away, hoping they don't touch you and put their hands on you, because it's a form of rejection, because dudes can't deal with, oh Lord have mercy, don't reject a motherfucking dude with a male goddamn ego. They'll fucking will fuck you up. And then, you know, well, why you scared of men? Because you, I don't know if you're the dude that's gonna have fragile masculinity today and decide today is the day, and bitch, you the one that I'm gonna fuck up because I am tired of being motherfucking rejected. Versus rejection is a part of life for everybody, but for some reason people act like when it comes to your pussy, I got the motherfucking right to it.
Well, here's the part that's truly scary to me. It's not even just that situation, it's the aftermath,
right?
Because honestly, the defenses I've seen of okay, I shouldn't even say defenses. Let's call it something else. The comments I've seen that blame her completely for this make me feel like if she would have been accusing him of sexual assault, they would feel the same way. And that is scary to me, because it's not that much of a difference. Like, if she would have said, look, and then he basically said, you can't leave this house and pin me down and have sex with me, people would have been like, what were you doing down this house? It was just one date. Sound like a fan that just got bitter because this, that, and the other happened. And this story is very similar to the way that a lot of women are sexually assaulted. It's by someone they know. It's by someone they trust. It's by someone in these murky situations, quote unquote. And you had a fight or flight response. You have people freezing up. You have people ignoring cues and shit. And so when we talk so callously about these things and so black and white about these things, a lot of times we're hurting the people that are listening, because so many women have been assaulted in general. So many,
right,
so many people have been assaulted in general, that when we extrapolate these values of victim blaming and it's your fault and you should have known better and what the fuck was you thinking, when we kind of do that, we are also telling other women that it's happened to, like, yeah, and that was your fault. Like, this situation I don't know about, don't ever tell me about it. Cause the only thing I'm gonna be thinking, cause you know, I don't know these people that we're talking about. I don't know Aziz Ansari and this woman. So, you know what I really think. Right. So when you come to me, even if I act like it's different for you, it's not different for you. Cool. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, this was all your fault. I'm being nice about it cause we friends. But really, it's just your fault. It's no different.
Correct. And then, you know, you have men that are very hurt and distraught when they be like, well, why didn't you tell me? Motherfucker, because I read your fucking Facebook post. Motherfucker, right. I read your Twitter post. I seen what you said under somebody's Instagram post.
Like, because, like I said, the individual instance of these things are different. But the reason a lot of this shit falls under the Me Too thing is about the way the societal impact of these things. It's about the way we make people feel in all the time. It's about the way we make women feel all the time in these situations. So that part is the common thread that combines it all. So, you know, like I said, when I first read this story, I went, sounds kind of like at best, it sounds like he misread her signs. At worst, it sounds like he just didn't give a fuck. But at the end of the day, like, I can see how these kind of things happen all the time and people don't feel this way or people don't have whatever, you know, and the bar so low for dudes, he still would be considered a good dude by most people because he didn't just take the pussy, he didn't get violent, he didn't threaten her, he didn't call her a bitch, he didn't, like, there's a lot of things he didn't do that we expect men basically to do when they're told no. So I can see how people would still have a very high opinion of the dude even after this situation. Not all people, but I can see how a lot of people would still have a high opinion of the dude. But, and like I said, to me, I was like, okay, maybe this is kind of a one-off. It doesn't. Then you look at the comments. And when you look at the comments, you're like, this mentality is the same for everybody.
Of course.
That part right there is the part that can't be separated. It's not, the events are different for people. The commentary is always like, these women, it's their fault.
Right, and you're not considering a lot of things because, like you said, and something that you said, it really sticked out to me, that nice guy dude kills me because right. It's a lot of dudes that's nice until they're told no, and it's a lot of dudes that quote unquote act like they're nice and act like they care, and then once something happens you go, oh, okay, you're not shit either, because if you really cared your response would be a response of somebody that actually gave a fuck about me and my safety.
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, it's a well-known thing at this point that people will say, like, oh, these and like, I think it's bullshit to be honest, but people will be like, these feminist men are the ones that's really out here assaulting people. I'm like, no, then in that case you mean all men, because the other men are just saying that they are not feminist and they will fucking rape you. It's not like these other men are like, they talk about raping people but they don't do it. Like, no, that just means all men ain't shit, and I'm okay, cool. But people always find it to be more of a slight against somebody like, say, a Cesar Ntari or something. And I'm not saying he raped anybody, but the point being, like, they find it more like, oh, and at the end of the day he just turned out to be a dude trying to fuck, and that's like worse. But it's like, it's still bad for our default for society is, oh, a dude just trying to fuck and treating you like shit, that should just be normal. You know, so like I said, I don't think most people at this point are even going to latch on to this as something that will truly affect him. I'll be surprised, but I bet you if it's more women, he gonna lose that Netflix show.
Of course.
If it's more women, and who knows, the way it sounds like this, and it, a lot of times the first person to accuse somebody, it kind of does sound a little like, man, I can see the way on that. It's, you know, the George Takei thing, the Neil deGrasse Tyson has a one, and you know, hers doesn't, you know, there's different levels of credibility to all this shit. But if it adds up, it'll come for him, you know. But the whole thing about, we don't need to hashtag his career, we don't need to go get him, nothing's happening to him as of yet.
Mm-mm.
And I really don't expect anything to happen unless more shit pops up, because right now, the way society is built, I feel like it ain't gonna, he will not be put on the Summer Jam screen over this, you know.
Nope.
So, all right. And then, also, five more women came forward to accuse James Franco of inappropriate or sexually exploitative behavior. James Franco, I read this article, but basically he started an acting school that he closed down abruptly last year, where it's like $300 a month for students to enter. And it was weird because he closed it down right around the Weinstein shit. So anyway, he closed it down. But the school basically was supposed to be different than other acting schools because he promised that he would fill his movies, because he does a lot of independent movies on his own. He would fill it with people from the school. And he was like, we're gonna be offering roles. So this ain't like those other bullshit acting schools where you pay all this money and then nothing ever happens. Like, we will fill roles with this. Well, it turns out that the roles he had were basically for women, and the women that got the roles, they all required either nudity or sex scenes. So it's like, you're gonna be playing a prostitute in this role, you're gonna be playing, you gotta get naked. And he was doing a lot of like, who's gonna pull their titties out, who's ready to get naked today? And if the women said no, then he like stormed off and got upset about it. So people felt like he was exploiting non-celebrity women and treating women as if they were basically just replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, one of the things I find interesting about this is that, you know, there were men in those classes who were like, and these bitches get all the roles and it's only because they show their titties. And you know who they probably blame for that? The women.
Right.
which is how most men think. It's these bitches out here sleeping their way to the top or whatever, right? But you don't look at the man above that who made the conditions to where the only way for a woman to get a role is to take her titties out. You wouldn't then go, wait a minute, isn't he the real culprit here? Shouldn't it be a meritocracy? Shouldn't people be getting roles by whether or not they're good and not if they're willing to take their clothes off? If they want to be an extra in a orgy scene and shit like that? Like, shouldn't there be more to this than that? He promised us legit chances to be actors in his movies, and I paid my money every month for that chance and for his instruction, but he didn't take it that seriously. You know, they were saying he would show up to class like sleep and shit because he'd been working on movies and stuff, and he's supposed to be instructing them, but he's like falling asleep. There was also people saying like he promised them like career advancement, and so even though they would do scenes where he felt like extremely they felt extremely uncomfortable, right, they just thought like he's James Franco, he must, you know, like I have to do this kind of
people act like that pressure ain't real. I don't know why people act like the power structure matter in situations, and it matters how people respond to shit when you have somebody over you that can make or break something in your life.
Right. Also, like, there was a scene where there was a sex scene where he had to simulate oral sex on people, on women. And so what happens is whenever there's a sex scene in a movie, those people normally aren't really naked. They put like these prosthetics on men's penises, and they put these guards on women's genitals so that your actual genitals aren't touching.
Right, and that's sometimes you look, you go, well, that don't look like realistic sex.
Well, none of it really does, but right. I'm just saying in general, even when it looks real, it's not.
Right.
It doesn't matter how. Like, there's a scene where you see like Woody Harrelson burying his face in some girl's ass. There's something there. Now, it's still very intimate. Correct. But there's something there that is keeping that from being, it's not porn. He's not literally doing that shit.
Right.
Well, he made two of the women take off the guards that they have that are supposed to keep you from, you know, like touching each other's genitals while simulating oral sex. Which, you know, obviously they didn't feel comfortable with that shit, but he was like, I'm an artiste, and the artiste got to, I guess, not have these guards on people's privates, or the film won't be good. I don't know how that would work necessarily.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, he removed protective plastic guards covering other actresses' vaginas while simulating oral sex on them. Two others said they had negative experiences on the set with him. They say he became angry when no women would agree to be topless. His attorney disputed all the women's allegations. And Franco went on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Look, in my life, I pride myself to take responsibility for things that I have done. I have to do that to maintain my well-being. The things that I heard that were on Twitter are not accurate, but I completely support people coming out and being able to voice, to have a voice, because they haven't had a voice in so long. So I don't want to shut them down in any way. If I've done something wrong, I'll fix it. I have to. He also had some teacher-student interactions where, he was a mentor to one of the women, Hillary Dusson. She found to be a really generous spirit, helping actors. Her feelings shifted after being selected to appear with a handful of other female students in what she thought was one of his art films. The other student, Natalie Chimiel, said that she was told the footage would be used in a Seven for All Mankind jeans commercial. Both women described what they considered being an unprofessional hostile shoot at the strip club. He had this happen at a strip club. The actresses who wore a mask and lingerie, he asked them, so who wants to take their shirt off? When they didn't volunteer, he stormed off. I felt like I was selected for something based on my hard work and my merit. Then I realized it was because I have nice breasts. It was clear that was not the case. I don't think he started teaching with bad intentions, but he went down a bad path and damaged a lot of people in the process. Also, Franco asked the women if any of them wanted to take the top off, and he was visibly angry when they declined. He just took advantage of our eagerness to work and be a part of something bigger. We were all
a lot of people do.
We're all these up and coming actors who were so hopeful. Franco, of course, says he didn't even make that request. So somebody lied, apparently, right? So yeah, it was, you know, it was the other thing I thought was kind of interesting too, because like I said, I saw men basically being like, well, one, this shouldn't count as Me Too. One, this is actually much closer to Me Too than even a season sorry shit. Right. This is literally in the workplace, you know, like it's like this idea that men have where it's like, it's so fucked up that a woman can suck a dude's dick and get ahead in the industry that I'm competing in. Well, isn't it more fucked up that the dude at the top would say, I'd rather have my dick sucked than have someone do a good job at the job that we're supposed to do? Like, why, how do you skip over that anger into it's a woman's fault? Because let me tell you something, if you made a shortcut for anybody, someone's gonna take the shortcut, assuming that that's what happened. I don't even think that's necessarily what happens all the time, but assuming that that's what happened, you blame the person for taking the shortcut and not the person for providing the shortcut,
or the system itself that allows the shortcut,
right? Because that shortcut's always going to exist. So law of numbers, someone's going to take it. And also, people do this shit to demean the credibility of any successful woman they don't like.
Right.
So even if a woman didn't do that shit, she becomes the woman who took advantage and fucked her way to the top. Cause I don't like her ass. Right? It's Amy Schumer must have fucked somebody to get that gig, as opposed to, oh, she earned it. You know, like she's just funny or whatever. I don't like her, but her shit is, she earned what she got. There's no, you know, and for men, we're constantly affirmed and validated. Even if there was a agent or somebody that was out here being like, if a man sucked my dick, I'll give him a part. We would never think of men that way. If a man made it to a stage, he earned it, deserved it, and should get credit for it.
Regardless of how he got there, and men may take this shortcut too, but hey, that's never an option enough that right. Fucking cross your mind, huh?
It would never cross people's mind that that was what happened. You know what I mean? So like, it's kind of interesting to see, how people still find a way to hate women in this conversation.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of it boils down to, in my opinion. And right. People just don't want to say that. You know, when I see people talk about certain things around this, I go, oh, okay, you just don't like women. And if somebody right. says you don't like women, you're the problem for pointing out the flat purpose of you don't like women. Because it's one of these things where there's no other excuse, because once we begin to talk and I question, you get to a point where there's no other answer other than, oh, I just don't like women.
So the other thing, too, is... they had videos that women would submit to be like auditions and stuff, and keep in mind it requires nudity. Some of these things, even what you would sign a contract to or whatever. One woman submitted a video, and all of a sudden the video ended up on Vimeo, which is a public, you know, a place where anyone can see it. Mm-hmm. And she felt violated, like, hey, I submitted that shit to y'all in confidence. It was an audition for a role, and now it's just on a fucking Vimeo. And then, of course, Franco and his agency was like, we had nothing to do with that. I don't know how I got on there.
Nah, I'm suing you because I didn't put it on there. How the fuck did it get on there?
Right.
If you didn't release it, somebody around you, family, friend, somebody connected to you released it, so you're fucking held accountable, because unless they worked for you, they had no goddamn business seeing this.
Right. So she's like, now if you Google me, you can see me naked.
Right.
I have never been on TV. I don't have any real credits. And of course, I regret that because I don't want that.
Right. And so now how do I get it down? So now I got to contact Vimeo and fucking fight to get it down.
Right. And then of course he had, you know, he had, people that, I mean, we talked about the woman that was his girlfriend that he tried to make suck his dick in a car or whatever. Which, you know, like I said, I can understand that somebody, I can understand how someone that's dating would be like, oh yeah, suck my dick in this car, and like, oh, I'm not into this. And then that shit not being like a, like people being like, kind of like the season sorry thing where it's like, I don't know how to feel about that. I don't feel so convicted one way or the other. I really can understand that. I'm not trying to people feel how they feel about that, right? But this shit is literally in the workplace. This is a power dynamic where you have control over these people's careers, where you've promised them work. This is different to me. This is worse. This is why it's part of the Me Too shit. It is not a this isn't even like consensually I had sex with a bunch of women and it just turned out that I treated them like an asshole. nah, this is literally you saying to these people, this is work. And if you're a person that claims to be trying to help these people get into the game, then all you're really using them for at your school is funneling out work so you can put nude people in the background of your shit, and it's only for the women, really. Nigga, that's fucked up.
I guarantee you men apply too, but guess what? They didn't get the job.
Right, like I said, there's men that pay $300 a month that are blaming these women. I guarantee that.
Right, versus suing him and go, motherfucker, this is discrimination against men. You know, if we want to be real about it, this is discrimination against men. And why didn't I get a part and why didn't I get a role? But instead, they're too fucking dumb and they go, well, it's the bitch's fault.
Yeah, his personal relationship with that actress that was talking about him on Twitter, I don't know. I'm leaving that out of it. And also, the shit where he tried to fuck a 17-year-old on Instagram or whatever, I'm also leaving that out of it, because apparently that's legal in New York or whatever, even if I feel like morally that feels kind of reprehensible, but
right.
Whatever, like I'm not here to change the law, but I am saying that for people that are like, I don't see how this counts as Me Too, this is how it counts. He did this shit under the guise of his job, and like I said, it affected how these women work. And long term, it affects how much women are paid. Because if I only see you as a sexual object, there's a reason I'm paying you 73 cents on the dollar. I don't see you as valuable.
Correct. And also, one of the things is, let's say one of the men who paid and not getting a role, let's say they do sue him, people wouldn't take it seriously.
Right.
And that also might be a reason why none of them came out. But the problem is, out of that group, most of them would blame the women. And that's right. What I'm calling out.
Right. Like I said, the workplace stuff is easier to parse because we have rules in the workplace.
Correct.
People can understand the power dynamic. Relationship wise, like the actress that was dating him that felt like, well, he was James Franco and I was just an up and coming actress and he was a jerk and that's why I don't act anymore. That still affected her job because she quit her dream, quote unquote. But I don't like getting into that because I know too many people that will be like, well, she must not really have wanted a dream, or, you know, so what? I can't be a jerk as your boyfriend. Like, I gotta be a fucking great boyfriend, or I'm in the Me Too movement. I don't know or necessarily want to parse all that out, because people's personal relationships get pretty fucked up pretty quick.
Yes, they do.
Which is one of the reasons that people should think twice about having personal relationships that involve work. You would think, you know, we're all human beings, we all make mistakes, but you would think that this would be a pause to that. Like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't be fucking people that I work with, knowing that a personal relationship gets way muddier than a business relationship. Business relationship, you have certain recourse. You can sue somebody. You can do all this. I can be emotionally abusive to you in a personal relationship, and it doesn't rise to the level of criminality. And if you tell somebody this story, it just sounds like I'm a dick, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'm not a good actor or a good boss, but I can still be one way at home and not that way at work, you know?
Correct.
You know, it's one of the reasons I don't, when people do all this shit where they blame all these people around the people, like, you know, like with Harvey Weinstein, well, so-and-so must have known. They might not have known. You don't know people. That's the thing people need to soak in. None of us know people, really. A motherfucker can be completely cool to you and completely a dick to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to how they treat
other people.
That's how
abuse works.
Yeah, and pay attention how they treat other people if you can, but you might not see it. There's a lot of people that don't see it, and people that are, whether it's the nice guy manipulator, whether it's the I'm just a very passionate worker guy, people have a lot of fucking disguises and experience being abusive. They not gonna just come out and slip up and be like, so I was raping somebody the other night, anyway, you want some more coke? Like, they're not gonna, that's not how those conversations happen. Like, they would, like, Harvey Weinstein, I guarantee, was going around telling people he was fucking actresses. Like, oh, you know, I fucked her, right? He wasn't going around going, you know, I raped that girl.
Right.
That's not how it works. So, like, I'm not even blaming the people around Franco and all this. I think certain things are easier for people to understand than others. You know, and I think it's clear workplace abuse, being in a position of power at this school, and being exploitative to these women. That is also Me Too. It's not just sexual assault. It's not just criminality. But the workplace can never be a fair place if this is the way that we're valuing people in the workplace. You can never get to that point where you're like, this is a fair, equitable system. So it rises to the level of, and that's why so-and-so made less money than her, than the star of the movie, quote-unquote, male co-star, because she's not as valued because we only see these women as a woman that should be showing us her tits. You know, we only see these women as somebody that, you know, I can say, hey, no, take off your take off the guard to your vagina because I want to do an oral sex scene. Like,
right. And also, this also plays a role with when you look at it, when you look at it for men and women, you go, okay, they quote unquote devalue you, and you women age out quicker in acting. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why you can have her and you can have Liam Neeson acting taking 4,552
right
forever.
Right. But meanwhile, you know, actress is done after she's 30, you know, right, for a lot of cases. Yeah. Anyway, man, I didn't know we were going to talk about that long. We got to start wrapping up because we got some stuff to do this afternoon. So let's do Sword Ratchetness, and that'll be it for this episode. All right, here we go. A looting of a samurai sword leads the charges against the owner and the thief. A 29-year-old man who was chasing the thief who had stolen the samurai sword got the prized possession back, but then was charged with having it. The Dumb and Dumber caper unfolded around 10:45 a.m. Wednesday at Newark's Penn Station, when Port Authority police officers spotted a man running with a long object in a black garbage bag and another man in hot pursuit. "He's got my stuff," screamed Fernando Pellet, who had been chasing after Leon Curtin, 51. Port Authority cops ordered Curtin to drop the object, a 4-foot katana sword that was inside a white sheath encased in a plastic garbage bag. Pelot, 29, of Orange, New Jersey, said that the weapon had been given to him as a gift several weeks ago and that he kept it for personal protection, a source said. Curtin, a resident of Jersey City, was charged with theft and possession of stolen property, cops said. Pelot, the other half of the dopey duo, was charged with weapons possession based on his admission that the weapon was his. So he wasn't even supposed to have a sword, and then he got stolen. All right, guys, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. Be careful with your swords out here in public.
Yes, be safe out here.
It was a long, not as funny episode as it could have been. But we'll be back with more jokes tomorrow. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah. Mwah.